This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, we're live. So as I said before, welcome all, thank you, and we're going to begin with a roll call.
Judge Coughlin?
I'm here.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Coates?
Here.
Judge Earl?
Here.
Judge Good? Judge Good?
Judge Herman?
Here.
Judge Honnick?
I'm on the phone.
Judge Hall?
Here.
Judge Kaufman?
Here.
Judge Poole?
Here.
Judge Lee?
Here.
Judge Maradonda?
Here.
Judge McCabe?
Aye.
Judge Saunders?
I received communication. Her plane was delayed. She'll be here at 11, according to the latest estimate.
Smith.
Judge Smith? Sherry Carter?
Here.
Richard Felstein?
Here.
Becca Fleming?
Here.
Tammy Grimm?
Here.
Jose Guillen?
Here.
Samuel Hammock? Kevin Harrigan?
Here.
Jeffrey Lewis?
Here.
Michael Planet? Michael Planet? Michael Roddy?
Here.
Brian Taylor? Brian Taylor? Linda Romero Solis?
Here.
Tanya Ugren Capo Bianco?
Here.
Christina Volkers?
No more. She's up.
Christina Volkers? David Yamasaki?
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right, we have more than a quorum, so this is great. Thank you all very much for arriving on time and helping us get started on time. As a reminder to all of you, the meeting is being recorded. Members on the public can join the call via listen code only, and they do have a code to do that. For those of you that are on the phone and anybody else speaking today, please, at all times possible, identify yourself just so we know, both for those who are on the phone and in the room, especially for me, who's talking. Appreciate that very much. Remind you, if you are on the phone, please don't mute us, put us on hold. You can mute us, but don't put us on hold, because then the meeting has to come to an abrupt stop. So for the first item this morning, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the May 16th and June 6th meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve.
All right. Motion by Tammy Grimm to approve.
Second.
Second by Jose Guillen. All in favor of approving the minutes, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. We're off to a good start. Minutes are approved. Turning now to item one on the agenda. And again, I'll note that there was no public comment received for the meeting. I've talked to Stephen, and as of 3 minutes ago, there's nobody signed in for public comment either. So there will be no public comment portion this morning simply because none was requested.
That gets us already moved
to item one, and Zlatko is here for the Budget Act of 2016 as a discussion item.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. We sent the memo out the day that the staff of the budget was signed, and we haven't really offered folks to send questions or calls, and I got a few. So I don't want to necessarily dive into the details unless folks want to ask questions about it. And I think overall, the budget has some positives, it has some negatives. We make progress in some areas, we're disappointed in others. I'm not getting the benefit to council, which obviously is an ongoing need for us. I'm not increasing the $20 million. Nothing as far as that goes, unfortunately, but seeing the Innovation Fund, seeing the support for the IMF, seeing the benefits funding, we are disappointed about not seeing any civil assessment revenue support, but the trust fund backfill, maintaining that, I think is going to provide some stability for us. Language access was an important increase for us. Prop 47, I think, was a bigger battle than folks might be aware of, in so much as there was an effort to try and score savings against the trial court budget, and that's what the Senate did. But when the conference committee was completed, there was no scoring. And the concern there was that as Prop 47 is perceived to generate a greater savings within the trial court, taking those dollars away, so while it was a small amount in the budget, the $1.7 million potential for it to have grown and established a precedent of scoring those savings with no continued cost adjustments, that was important. We have case management, I think, was a huge, huge issue for us in getting that funded. It recognizes the administration legislature's commitment to modernizing Frogport IT and Keeps Management Systems. And that was a pleasant surprise. I think it was really predicated on the fact that the branch has a vision for technology within the branch, and it wasn't just a one-off, that they understood that we have a thoughtful plan on where we want the Frogport to be in terms of modern Keeps Management Systems. So really, like I said, there's some holes in the budget, but then when you start looking at some of the bits and pieces, they are addressing important areas between the Phoenix funding moving to the general fund and this over the next 5 years. I think fairly substantially. Obviously, the fines and fees revenue issues continues to be a concern for us and all of you. There's obviously a lot of talk, and maybe Corey, if there's ever any questions about what's going on in the legislature with Pittsburgh's bill on 881 and what it might be doing to fines and fees. We've been doing a lot of work to protect the branch budget. We know there's partners also at risk in terms of the cities and counties and the general fund at large as far as revenue loss, and so that's been a discussion point for us because the budget never ends. And even though the budget is done, there's a subsequent legislation that might cause new costs for us that we need to be wary of if we're not funded, as well as potential revenue. This is the ongoing conversations we have with the administration and legislature about what the budget means to us and what any legislation might mean, because it never ends as far as the budget goes. What the last item will be in terms of prioritization for ECPs next year, we can now have a little better frame of reference for what was and wasn't included and what that means for our discussion at the end of the agenda. If there's any questions, please feel free.
Just curious, given the uncertainty of fees and fines, have we thought about doing a in-depth dive as to the causes for the revenue decline and looking at all the system-wide changes that have taken place, let's say, in the last 5 years.
To pinpoint, we've done some work in looking at causation, and we had some folks looking at that, and what's difficult is we would think that there'd be things that we could get in terms of data. The data points are, could you go to your local chief of police and ask them what their philosophy is going to be on traffic? Are they going to tell you the traffic standard, the staffing that they're going to be doing? How much are they spending time on traffic that they're used to? And I think it varies by county. Some counties, I think, are probably seeing little to no change in their historical citations, and others are seeing large dips. That's what's hard is that the system has factors going both ways. It's trying to create a model that exactly tracks 58 individual decisions that are happening locally. Obviously the CFAC discussion at the Facilities Advisory Committee, even though we have been in one of the longest economic recoveries, we're still seeing our fine revenue declining. So is it not consistent with an economic cycle? So what is it that's fundamentally going out there? Has realignment changed the way police, with the revenues that they're getting from real, do they not need to be as dependent on traffic revenues because they have some other revenue that can maintain their systems? There's a lot to see there, but what's hard is who's forthcoming with data. We get certain amounts of data, but to understand why it's changing, the folks that we had looked at this, they had a hard time really. Because we don't have construction fund, we don't have 20 or 30 years of data to evaluate against business cycles. I mean, the construction fund's about 10 years old. That's not enough when we met with the Department of Finance to ask them about looking at long-term projections. They go, do you have 30 years of data, 20 years of data? We said, no, we don't. So then they can't gauge it against prior business cycles to see how the behavior has changed.
Maybe we can entice an educational institution provide a robust research opportunity and say maybe we'll give you.
What I know in the short term is that the revenues are going down, and nobody's great at 30-year revenue projections. But, when we have a sign at the bottom saying that we will have this revenue, we have to be pretty certain that that's there. And overall, I know you're all struggling with that, and you have your own local projections about what your local revenues are. And if you had to make a 30-year projection to fund your operation.
Our question was any information on the $25 million innovative grants, timeline for criteria, when do we think?
Yeah, there'll be a presentation. The committee just met yesterday to talk about some of the concepts around the structure of the grant proposals. And so they are expecting to submit something to the council in August to make sure I get the, it's already like, what, the 7th of July, I can't believe that. So there's something out there for folks to react to come the August council meeting, so the materials will be out for folks to look at and comment on. Our struggle is balancing the burden of the grant and the data that we need, and then ensuring that we can turn that one-time money into ongoing resources for those innovations that prove to be successful and worthy of ongoing investment by the state.
And how is this committee and that committee sharing information or looking at, one, we provide the base funding, and this is going to be a one-time, three-year. Is there an opportunity to kind of look at what that one-time funding may cost on the ongoing funding?
That would be, I assume that would be part of what any grant proposal would be submitted, is what is it that you think your ongoing needs are after this, so we can determine effectiveness, one-time cost, and that's what this is going to be helpful for versus ongoing needs. And one could see that there's an opportunity to the investment to create a change in your program that then provides you the resources to fund the ongoing costs with greater level of service. Those are the kinds of things that folks are going to look at. But I know Judge Rosenberg is heading up a robust discussion with the other nine members of the committee about it. And with Judge Barton on that, I don't know who else is on the committee that's here. So if there's anything that you want to provide as far as insight on that. Maybe you weren't able to make the call yesterday, but
I was briefed on it, though, and I do know the timeline is, as you've indicated, to have a report to the council by August 16th for consideration in that meeting with the outlines of the criteria for the grant.
We want maximum flexibility so that there's as many opportunities within the three pots. But that's a perspective that Judge Rosenberg is bringing after discussions with the chief about the great desire to have this funding used to the maximum extent to really drive new investment in the branch for these areas.
Any other questions for Zlucko on budget? Sam?
On page 12 of the material, the chart on the courthouse of the judicial branch facilities program, we have various amounts of money for various projects at various stages. Is it the intent of the legislature that, for instance, the project that's slated for construction, that construction begins in 2016?
Well, during the legislative discussions, there was concerns expressed by the legislative analysts about our ability to proceed given the revenue projections, and they were looking to hold off on recommending any. But what it turned into is a report on our ability to actually execute all of these projects that are in the budget. So there's a supplemental report to the budget that requires the Judicial Council to submit a plan on how to actually manage all the projects given the revenue constraints that we have. So I think the CFAC meeting last week is the beginning of that discussion about what are our options. But it was obviously concerned in the LAO and about our ability to fund all these projects given the reduction of the revenues.
Judge Cope, did you have a question? I thought I saw another hand back there. Okay. I'm just waking up for item two. So, any other question for Zlatko?
I appreciate all your help for all those that came to the hearings and all the work in the Capitol and with the administration on a lot of things. And so I do want to thank all of you and everybody that's on the phone who is participating in the budget process. I said to the IT folks or the JCTC, I said, watching and going through the work on deliberating through issues helps us convey to the Department of Finance and decision makers in the legislature that we are going through a very rigorous process. These aren't just, you know, let's pull these together and put it. There is a lot of work, a lot of collaboration, and a lot of cooperation within the branch to get what you have before you. So it is the result of a lot of hard work and a lot of thought. So we appreciate that.
Anything else? Okay, Zlatko, thank you very much. All right, that moves us to item two on the agenda. Judge Cope is here. Don Will was going to be here, but
yes, Judge, I'm on the phone.
Are you feeling?
Pardon me?
Feeling good?
Yes.
Don had a heart incident, laid him up in his hands.
So, and then Stephen is here as well to help us with these numbers. So just to give a little bit of background on this before I turn to Judge Cope, as it states in your materials, we last presented to the Judicial Council at their last meeting, and the position of this committee, this advisory committee to the Council concerning certain options for the Dependency Council and the funding methodology was, essentially, there are no options. I'm probably overstating that a little bit, but the position of this committee was we've provided the option, and that's the option we recommend that you accept. At the Judicial Council meeting, there was significant public comment related to this, as candidly there has been at prior meetings. I was at that meeting. The comments were valid concerns, but I think, speaking candidly, were not concerns that were new. They had been expressed previously, but I don't.
They were not
valid. The Council immediately tabled the motion. So when the item came up for discussion, it was tabled. I wasn't aware of the parliamentary procedure for tabling, but tabling means discussion is over. And the chief
immediately stopped discussion
taken on the motion to table. It was granted. I'm not sure if it was unanimous, but it was a significant majority that granted it, and that removed the item from discussion. However, once it was then removed and tabled, we then got direction, and the direction came from the chair, Justice Miller, and he asked that the item be sent back down to us as a summary
to provide information
to the Judicial Council's request for more detailed information concerning options. So I'm just going to state this as bluntly as I can. They want information. They want these options to be as clear as possible, and I think that's an appropriate request. So we immediately after the meeting on the drive home, as a matter of fact, I was on the phone with Steve and I was on the phone with Don.
We discussed quite a few things.
I think we've come up with, and they're in your material, some options. Judge Cope, you want to add to that as far as what happened at the meeting or the presentation to the meeting?
If I could, I'd actually like to go a little bit farther back than what you said.
That's a good idea.
As we know, kind of introduction, that in the April 2015 Judicial Council meeting, that this committee had proposed to the Judicial Council the adoption of a new formula for distributing funding for court-appointed dependency counsel that just like WAFM gets us away from a historically based funding for those attorneys and takes it to a caseload-based funding model. And when the council adopted that proposal in April of 2015, in response to the same kind of public input as continues to exist, the council created a joint subcommittee with members from this committee and also members from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to look at the formula for determining what caseload is appropriate and how that caseload ought to be funded. That joint subcommittee provided its recommendation in April, and it was adopted except for one of the 10 points on the 10th point, which dealt with how to fund the dependency council in small courts. That was sent back to the subcommittee for further recommendations. So then those four recommendations,
five recommendations really,
one complete recommendation and one with four subparts. That was what was discussed at the April 2016 Judicial Council meeting, and here we are again. They were sent back. And the other thing that I would add to what Judge Conklin said was the subcommittee was disbanded.
this point, this is a dollars issue. And so the council, I think, wanted the budget advisory committee to tell them what's it going to cost for us to do these different options, what's the best approach to take. I think that really everybody here is issues like,
I think that's a very accurate perspective, and I'm glad you added that, because I think, and that's some of the comments we received afterwards, is just tell us the dollars issue, tell us the cost, so that they have the cost in mind to make that decision. I don't know if somebody's put this on hold or is vacuuming. Okay, I think we're good. All right, so I think that's a good way to look at it, is they want numbers and information on numbers. The option two, which was, I think, not at issue at all, which is now option one, was the joint subcommittee recommendation on small court pilot projects. Now, what happened was, at least my understanding is, everything was tabled, so they didn't take action on anything. When this committee was asked earlier, what is now option one in your materials and what was option two was unanimous approval. So that wasn't particularly the discussion. The discussion, as Judge Cope said, was option one, which was broken down to A, B, C, and D. I remind you that when it went out to this committee, we considered it by telephonic vote, and the ultimate decision was, as I've earlier said, no recommendation beyond what we've already said. However, if we did make a recommendation, it'd be 1D, as in David, and I think of those voting, it was unanimous that 1D would be the one considered. So now we step back a little bit. I'm going to let Stephen and Don talk to you about the option three that has been presented. But perhaps to oversimplify, what the concept of this option is, and the numbers will speak to the option itself, is that the message that I understood this committee was firm about to the council was, this is the funding methodology that was previously considered approved and should be followed. And my opinion is option three does that. It says we are going to continue to follow that. However, given the fact that not a single new dollar came in that was anticipated for dependency council funding, and given what is admittedly a significant impact on every court involved, but some courts more than others, and as Judge Cope said, this is now narrowed down to the small courts. Is there any way, at least in the short term, to stay true to the method, yet address the significant concerns of the small courts? And I think option three does that. Just essentially what the concept was, and again, to oversimplify, was if we can adjust in the short term the money going to the recipient courts, to use a WAFM phrase, reduce that very slightly, and then use that to offset some of the impact to the small courts, and the significant decrease that they're going to have. Admittedly, we all have decreases. In the short term, is there a way we can accomplish that? And for less than $1 million, we can. And that's the numbers now that I think Stephen and Don are going to run through with you. Obviously, questions are welcome as we go.
The one-year period.
One-year period. So, again, the funding methodology is not changing. It's just for the one-year period, we're saying for this short time period, we're going to, I don't know how else to say it, we're going to tweak the numbers from the methodology to allow for some of the smaller courts to have some relief. So you all have the materials on that, and Stephen has the numbers, and we'll walk through those with you as well as Don.
Judge Coughlin, I'm going to suggest that you consider entertaining a motion on option one, since it was already being recommended by this body. It has nothing to do with allocations for 16-17.
So we're going to break them up. That's a good suggestion where we started. So is there a motion is that your motion, Judge Cope?
That is a great idea, and I so move.
Okay, so Judge Cope has now moved that option one be recommended to the council. Judge Earl seconds. Any discussion on that first part of this discussion? Hearing none, no comments on the phone. All in favor of option one being recommended to the Judicial Council for consideration, aye?
Aye.
Any opposition? So now option one will be forwarded to the Judicial Council as a recommendation. And now we drill down into what is option two and three in the materials before you. Stephen, thank you for that suggestion.
You're welcome, Judge. option two are alternative options. They're meant to be mutually exclusive. You either adopt option two, option three, or you can make a motion to present some other alternative. Option two is what was originally being recommended by the Telford Budget Advisory Committee to the Council, specifically to recommend. I would try to stay true to the numbering, the sequencing in the various reports, but the option 1D, and that was just to set aside $150,000 for what was categorized as small courts. If their actual expenditures were going to exceed the allocation based on the current methodology approved by the Council in April 2015. And given the new funding methodology for the total funding need, which amounts to, and if you look at attachment, I think it's B, it's $202.9 million statewide, compared to the actual funding for 2016-17 of $114.7 million. So option two is just to maintain the status quo recommendation. But we would also provide the concrete numbers for each of the options that were presented to the Council in June, but tabled. And those are provided in attachments in the report. So what option three does is I would say, is a hybrid. When Don and I spoke to Judge Conklin, there are many permutations. And Judge Conklin didn't want to confuse the issue. We basically tried to take kind of a hybrid between options 1C and 1D.
Setting aside a certain amount of money only
versus suspending the reallocation for certain courts, eligible courts, however you... whatever the criteria was,
the RAS clusters,
or look at caseload. And again, there's so many different permutations on what the cutoff could be. If you, I can go over it in some of the technical details. I think it's laid out pretty clearly in the report in terms of what the allocations would are for each court. I don't know if Don wants to add anything.
So this option, so I believe you're referring to attachment H, which is the allocation under option three. That I think most directly sets this forth, is that?
That's right.
Okay. So that's page 159 of your material.
And Stephen, I don't need to add anything.
Stephen, under the option two, the columns, one is under 1C, one is under 1D.
What page are you on, Judge McCabe?
151, attachment D. So side by side, so option two, option three. You have two sets of columns, one for 1C, one for 1D.
That's right.
Okay. And so if option two were chosen, would which of these columns would the committee be adopting?
So under option two, the recommended option would be 1D, column J. The numbers in column J.
Thank you.
Just to give a little bit of context, this might be helpful, is that the Joint Subcommittee, when they went to the Council in June and presented what was called recommendation number one, they did not recommend a specific, of the four options presented, they did not recommend a specific option or a combination of options, although the Charco Budget Advisory Committee did. You did go to the Council and say, you did recommend option 1D, so that would be status quo recommendation. The alternative that Judge Conklin is providing to you for your consideration is option three, which is a hybrid of what's in columns I and J, the original options 1C and 1D in the Joint Subcommittee report. And this is attachment C, page 151, presents
all three. And it's described on page 103, option three, as a one-time suspension. That's the best wording, but it's not a suspension of the allocation method. It's a slight reduction of the amount of money that is being distributed to certain courts to offset the money to other courts. So I understand the word suspension, and Judge Cope and I talked about this earlier, and I think Judge Cope used the word finality in the sense of we're trying to come up and recommend to the Council that there be finality to this. And candidly, I believe option three does provide that, but at the same time addresses the concerns. Judge Kaufman?
Actually, there's two sets of questions. One is, what's the difference in money between option two and option three, number one? And number two is, how many courts would be affected when you define small courts? I know my definition. I know it's different than other people's. But what, how many courts would stay the same? And then lastly is, the other part of the question is this a one-year finale, suspension, whatever word you want to use? But during that year, what are the plans to put together a group of people, a group of whatever, just look at these small courts and figure out what is really affected, what is fair, so that next year when we come back again to deal with this, that information, so that we can do it appropriately?
Let me answer those backwards, because three is the one that I think, and as I understand the options, it would say we would turn to the council and say, this is our recommendation. If you want to appoint counsel, small courts, to come up with recommendations, then that's a council prerogative to do. But we would not go beyond the recommendations we're making now. Concerning the actual numbers, there's some interesting ways we got to that, and Stephen, I think, has those as far as the discussion between small courts and others. But before we get there, Sherry Carter has a question.
So I think the materials, actually, I thought were really helpful. If you turn to page 153, it shows you the courts under option two, and option two actually includes two components, and then the courts under option three. So they have the ones designated for the courts. It's 29 in option two, and it's 20 in option three. I wasn't even on the committee, but just hope I did read the materials detailed last night. So if you look at page 153, it shows you the courts that they're talking about. Option two seems to suspend it for 29, option 3 for 20. And the way it's funded is reflected in documents. If you go to 169, for example, it shows you the pro rata of reduction. So they're taking it from the courts that under the methodology have the most need, and they're taking the money from those courts to fund the suspension in either option.
And I just, by the way, I came up with an arbitrary figure of $10,000. So when we were discussing this, those courts that are receiving $10,000 or less arbitrarily are not then impacted.
And
so just an arbitrary, if Stephen said, what's the rationale for that? I would explain that. And the rationale is, the number came to me when I was driving over in San Francisco to Fresno at 8 o'clock, stuck on the Pacheco Pass. I don't know how it came to me, but that's the best answer I can give you. Judge Earle, and then I thought it's another hand. Judge Earle?
My question may be for Judge Cope. In terms of how the joint subcommittee categorized which courts would be eligible for this suspension, it seems to me to be different than how we view Cluster 1 courts. It's not just Cluster 1 according to RAS or according to WAPA. So I wanted to kind of get some insight on what the thought was about that and why focused on typical clusters.
And Stephen has answers to that, too. But Judge Cope?
That's better than mine. My
I didn't mean to cut you off. We had talked about that.
Relatively arbitrary number. It's not the same as it is for Waffle. And I think Don has an answer to it also.
And maybe I'll let Don address why the joint subcommittee adopted their criteria for their original recommendation. Don, would you?
Okay. The joint subcommittee did look at some different ways of defining and categorizing small courts, and they landed on using an average of the child welfare caseloads that are reported by the California Department of Social Services and that make up a piece of the workload model. I don't think, frankly, the joint subcommittee was thinking that it would, they were making a decision that would be as thought over as that decision has been, but they decided to create a cutoff for the small courts that they were conceiving of in their report based on an average of 200 cases at any one time. Then during the second round over the last couple of months, when the subcommittee held more focus groups and talked to more judges and courts, they shifted that just as an option for the Judicial Council to consider to be a cutoff of what amounted to 360 cases or less using the child welfare numbers. That left, that's where the 29 small courts in the subcommittee second report came from. And then in this third version, in, so that's the version that's being used in option two. And then in this third version, we essentially split the difference and used the metric of, Stephen, tell me if this is right, the highest child welfare case count in of a cluster one court would be the child welfare case count cutoff for the court. So we're still using child welfare cases. We're restricting it to cluster one and a few cluster two courts that are under the highest number of a cluster one court, and that gave us, I believe, 20 courts in that suspension group.
Judge McKay.
Option three is a one-year suspension. So it's temporary, not a permanent solution.
That's correct.
So therefore, it's only 1 year, and this is approved, and then the council approves it, and after the 1 year, then it's going to revert back to the same level which the small courts are contending is problematic. So we're the dog proverbially chasing our tail, and it sounds like if we're going to adopt three in recognition of issues going on with those cases, those courts, which I think were 350 and below caseload was the mark, or 360 if I recall correctly, seems to me that there should be further work as Waltham had done when it did some parking lot issues and trying to identify what issues are occurring and what funding level should be on a permanent basis to address these inequities. So three for me is a temporary solution, and that should be presented to the council if it's adopted as a temporary for the small court only.
And that's exactly the way, at least that's exactly what I was intended to be presented, was it's a temporary option, and I know that's almost a redundant term, but that's all it is. We're saying true to the method, and council, if you want to assign back to tick back or to whatever you create, further work, as Judge McCabe has suggested, that's appropriate. But all it is trying to give us some breathing room, and it's trying to give the council some breathing room with the numbers behind it.
I'll note that provincially, you know, my court does better under two, but I'll move that we adopt three. I think that's appropriate, and it gives us a year to look at this issue as we did in Waltham and as the parking lot, and then hopefully the council will agree to authorize further work, and that they can isolate those issues and come up with a permanent solution for those courts.
Okay, so now we have, Judge Earl has a question, but before that we have a motion to adopt three. Obviously, we're still open for comment, but the motion is to adopt three. Is there a second on the motion?
I'll second it. We also do better under option two.
Second. So now, Judge Earl, did you have a...
Well, I had maybe a question or maybe a comment is, I would prefer to see this group be more proactive in our recommendation to the council and make a recommendation that we do something in the next year to solve the problem, that we not wait for them to direct
the amendment.
Yeah, and I would adopt that recommendation because I think this group should be, since we're intimately involved in it anyway, we should continue, and I think the council would probably be happy to have us continue to work on it.
All right, and Stephen's pointing out that does appear to be consistent in the motion you have on page 103, the recommendations on page 105. But again, I appreciate Judge Earl's comment, but I think it's exactly what at least my interpretation of the instruction back to tick back was that's our job. And so I think Judge Earl's comment is very appropriate on that there should
be. I'll accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. And the second to the motion with the friendly amendment has been made. Any further discussion on this? I know we're throwing a lot at you. The council understood. I mean, they assigned it to us 2 weeks ago. They said if you can come back to us on July 27th, that'd be great. I intend to appear there. As a side, this is something we need to move expeditiously on, but for various reasons, courts are not going to lose funding immediately as of July 27th. There's different ways it's implemented, I think, is the best way to say. Judge Cope?
From a matter of a practical point of view, the council would probably want a status in 6 months at their December meeting, just so that they see, have you resolved the issue, prepared to deal with it, but they want something mid-year.
Okay. Judge Cope, did you have a question or comment?
Well, a couple of comments. First, as to what Sherry said, this isn't the result of another committee. This is staff crunching numbers and coming up with these recommendations to this committee. And so I hope, Sherry, that you were involved in all these conversations. I don't think there were any.
I was not, but I read them in detail, and I am willing to vote for option 3.
I don't doubt that you're very familiar with them, but
just a comment that I didn't reach out to Sherry, but I'll be as candid with you as I can. The fact that Sherry didn't call me was very encouraging in the sense that I know if anybody can find an inconsistency, Sherry can. So I didn't have time to call her, but as I was driving this morning, I thought Sherry didn't call, which probably means the materials, but Sherry knows what I mean. It was great. So I'm sorry. Judge Cope, further comment?
That's fine. My other comment was, and I have no problem with voting for number 3, but I also think that option number 3 is the result of comments and pressure from others who have been saying for the last several months, let's suspend this, let's delay this. And my reaction has been pretty much consistent with the reaction here. What's the point of that? Are we just going to put off until next year what we don't want to do this year for no other reason? What's going to happen between now and then? And the recommendation says the point of that is to allow the small courts an opportunity to tell us why it shouldn't. This be the case, and
because as the two committees I've worked on have looked at this, the problems that the small courts have are very legitimate problems. But how do you put a dollar amount to the fact that their lawyers have to commute farther than a lawyer in San Diego? San Diego lawyers will tell you they have their problems as well that are unique to them, and so my question all along has been, what's going to be the point of delaying it for a year?
I agree. My mantra is we're not delaying it, and I don't think we are delaying it. I think if I understand Judge Cope's comment is we're not delaying it. And at the end of a year, if nothing changes, we're back to the recommendation that we suggested that they adopt, unless they provide alternatives, or we back to them.
Then my question is, at the end of that year, we'll be 1 year into the 1 or 2 years into the glide path. So did then those small courts jump from no reallocation to the 60% reallocation, or do they go back to start their glide path at a different time scale?
I think we're going to have to. I'm confident that's going to come back to us to address.
Oh, not today then.
If there's any suggestions about how to do that, but I don't think that's part of the recommendation today.
We're replicating what Waltham went through and spent months arguing about, and there are a number of us at this table that were involved in that.
And when you're dealing with a net zero sum shuffle,
a glide path was the conclusion that the group came up with after vetting this, months. And some of these were quite heated. Because we're in essence cannibalizing each other. But in necessity, under the existing conditions, Branch has to grapple with this. And we've started this path with Waltham's lead, our chair, Lori Earle, and others around the table, said this is where we need to go, and here's how we're going to do this with a weighted caseload-based formula. Great. And then we anticipated that these other adjustments were going to follow. Everybody was going to get hit to the, okay, weighted base caseload. Now let's look at every other funding source. How does this affect us, et cetera? And we were hoping that there'd be more infusion, a larger infusion of money from the other two branches. Unfortunately, there hasn't been. Not that we're ingrates. We're grateful that we've gotten increases each year, but we haven't gotten the level that we'd hoped within the 5-year period.
And we have some folks sitting around this court, this table. I'm looking at two counties that are just getting creamed by WAFM, Alameda and Santa Clara. You folks were at the table and you were involved in it. So I think this is an appropriate measure. I think it's consistent with what we've already done. And you're right, we could just plunge in and decide to do something today. But I think this is something that requires due diligence and giving the small courts the opportunity to present all the unique issues that happen in their universe so that we can appropriately and accurately identify those issues and what would be equitable. Being imprudent is not what we, the judiciary, are about, and I think a year isn't like 10 years. It's a year. Gives us a year at least to work on this ongoing issue that has been festering for decades, quite frankly. So I would hope and encourage you to approve option three.
Mr. Kaufman, did you have a comment?
I was just going to add one thing. I understand what everybody's saying, but the other thing is, because I'm in the small court and we've been talking, we realize that if option three is passed, we have a year. That's not, we just come back here and say, hey, poor me, you got to help us. We have a problem, and we have to face it, but we're starting a discussion how what efficiencies, how effective we can be, so that when the year comes back, we can come back to this committee or whatever committee is appropriate and say, these are the real dynamics, this is the real numbers, this is what we can do, this is where we can save money, this is what we can do. And quite honestly, if we can't do that, then this committee is going to have to do what they have to do, whether it's a 40 or a 60% cut. But I think right now it's so devastating to us that, and it's such a small amount of money, quite honestly, to solve this problem for a year. But I think we have the balls in our court to basically solve it, or at least come up, get some help to try to figure out how to solve it so that we can come back and say, this is what we really need, and this is why, and then this committee can decide what to do with it.
Maureen may be able to answer this, and following up on what Judge Cope said, that we're kind of possibly putting this off a year, but I know there was a lot of talk in the legislative session about increasing funding for dependency counsel, and I don't know where that ended up. I kind of lost track of that, and what are really the prospects for the future? Because if we come back a year from now and we're still looking at $114.7 million.
Yeah, and I mean, it was there until the last minute, and really what the dynamics were is that when the staff were briefing the members on the package that they'd agreed to with the administration, there were just shortages in other areas that their caucuses felt were more important, like in housing. And so when they directed staff, it unfortunately fell out of the numbers. Speeches by members in the Senate, in the Assembly, on the floor, spoke to, like in some cases, the only comment that the budget was short on
members was for dependency.
They lauded all the nice things they said, but the one thing that this budget lacks is the helping, you know, children, and in many cases, and one of the examples was many of the attorneys are women, so this was an important women's caucus issue, that money was not there and that they should work to find it. But the problem is that in the math of the budget in which the governor was pushing one-time funding and therefore one-time expenditures, the houses didn't do the math properly to dig in deep to really push into the ongoing pot. They took one-time money in the Assembly particularly and spent it on a bunch of ongoing programs. So when it came down to the administration saying you have this much ongoing and this much one-time, it didn't work out. So there's a tremendous amount of support for it, but not enough to have got it to that threshold of the other priorities for the legislature.
We have to get it next year.
We keep working. We all did a lot of work. The advocates are walking the halls. They were all caught off guard. I think they thought it was so in, and it wasn't, because it got to be really, in some ways, a math problem for them, which is unfortunate. But when they're given hard parameters by the administration about what they would agree to being ongoing expenses, and if $29 million was a large pot. I can't believe that they couldn't find at least some sort of money to leave behind, sort of zeroed it out. It was, I think, they went from Wednesday night to Thursday night, and that's how it was gone, amongst other things that were also taken out of the budget to
fill that gap.
David Yamasaki?
Yes, thank you. So I have been serving with Judge Cope on this joint subcommittee, and we have reviewed all of the information that had been the basis for the formula up to this point. We've also asked for refinement of the information. I think the methodology that was created for this gradual reallocation shift was based on pretty solid information. And as we've heard, many of the courts, in fact, most all of the courts are woefully underfunded based on the needs that exist. So my concern is partially based on some of the comments that have already been made. We are kicking the can down the road on the hope that there's going to be additional funding. And I get absolutely how difficult it is for courts to absorb this 40% reallocation, but it's all of the courts who are sustaining some pretty significant reductions that are looking at changing services as they know it. And I don't, since we don't know, since there's a lot of information that's already been presented, much more than when we started the fiscal year, this notion that what are we going to do next year, I'm concerned that we're creating a temporary solution that will get us right to the same point next year, and the cut at that point is going to be huge in one shot. So the gradual approach, in my view, seems appropriate based on the methodology that had already been established. Painful, yes. We're hoping for more money, yes. It's not here. And there's no indication that we're going to see any next year. So I'm a little concerned that keeping this thing down the road with no discernible information that would sway will be problematic.
And that's a valid concern. And again, my perception differs a little bit in the sense of we're not kicking it down the road. We're saying a year from now, the impact is still going to be what the impact's going to be. In the current year, the impact will be altered to give us time at the council's direction to address that. But I understand the kicking the can analogy. I think the can has arrived, and that's the message we're sending. And a year from now, it may be even worse. And that is something that this option creates, but I think it gives the room necessary to maybe rely upon those people in the room that are much smarter than I am to come up with ideas and say, what about this? So that's why I think option three is Rick?
So looking at a lot of these courts, which are the small rural courts in isolated areas, I think the analogy is that, we have post offices in a lot of areas that don't make economic sense based upon the number of people there, but there's a commitment to access to those services. And just like the federal government realized that and funded appropriately, I think we have to really consider that in moving forward with the smaller courts. They are there. They need a certain level of funding to operate reasonably, and if we're going to make a commitment to access in those committees, we may have to do something other than just pure caseload-based funding, in particular when you think about size and lack of economy of scale, as well as the isolation issue. So I would certainly support the extra year to evaluate that further.
Are there any other comments or questions?
I have a comment on the phone. This is Judge Heinrichs. First of all, I think that we should at least talk about exploring that perhaps the judicial branch is not the appropriate place to fund dependency counsel in the long term. I think that, I don't know where it goes besides us, but I think that the attorneys do deserve some economy of scale to district attorneys and county councils and all those others and other kind of models, and that perhaps there's a better model somewhere else that addresses that. And I think that that's a policy thing that we're the numbers crunchers, but I think that that needs to be discussed in some way. I support number three, even though it's not the best option for my individual county. I agree with Judge Kaufman's comments that, we have the message at smaller courts, and we're going to be looking as best we can. The amount of money that's involved is not all that much. But I also think in our formulas for these council ones that the BLS index number perhaps is wrong to use, or the way it's used is wrong in this case. attorneys don't necessarily, I mean, I don't think that number is as valid in this formula as others, and I think we should explore that, and that gives us a year to do those things. But I support number three, but I think that we should be asking some other questions about how it could be effectively funded, whether it's individual courts or by appellate district or some other type of thing. I think that the question should be larger than just what we're looking at now, and I think that that year, this additional year, will give us that meaningful conversation. So those are my comments.
Very good. Thank you. Sherry Carter?
I continue to support option three, but I would not encourage us to look at components within the formula. Those were deeply reviewed, vetted, refined over a period of way over a year. And I would not support us going back and trying to second guess the work that was done in the committee that looked at all of those various components. I do think it's small courts have a unique need when it comes to dependency counsel. That's very different than WAPA because the fact that even if you look at page 159 and the amount of funding in some of these counties that are going to be close suspended, if they have one case file, it can be a bigger problem than in other counties. So I do strongly support, you know, three. I think it would give us a chance to try to see how we could possibly work that out, but I would absolutely not support us revisiting the elements that were painful. I just, Smith, I mean, we went through them in detail and refined, and I think it's too easy to play, what is it, Monday morning football? Thank you. That's an analogy I know. But anyway, I continue to support three. I think we should look at if there are ways we can do a better job of forming collaborations or regional ways to cover the dependency workload in those areas or whatever we need to do, but I would not support revisiting the actual formula.
Okay, and those are all valid comments. Again, so the motion is clear. I believe, addressing Sherry Carter's comment, I don't believe the motion anticipates that.
Okay.
If that, I think it was Judge McCabe's motion. Is that accurate, Judge McCabe?
Right.
Okay. With a second, the friendly amendment, any further discussion? All in favor of adopting option three as a recommendation to the council for consideration, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, we're right. It's early. And now we're moving to item three. Which is a discussion from Judge Kuhl and David Yamasaki concerning Prop 47 funding. This is, well, I'll let them tell you what page it is of the materials. We've got Judge Kuhl and David Yamasaki. Thank you.
This is the proposal of two options for the allocation of $21.4 million for Prop 47 funding for the fiscal year now beginning. I'll remind you that the fiscal year just passed allocated Prop 47 money in two distributions. The first half year distribution took into account 10-year average statewide felony filing, as well as the number of statewide defaults for Prop 47 proceedings that were filed. And the reason for that, like at the time, is that there were courts that were concerned that they were not at the beginning of the Prop 47 implementation able to accurately capture the number.
Yeah,
I can go from there. So the significant points within those options are really the focus of what data is identifying volume of the petitions for each of the different courts. And as you see in option one on page 16, the information that is the basis for the distribution assumes information from that was filed from November 5, 2014, following the enactment of Prop 47 through March 31, 2016. That's one basis, and of course it's the annual allocation of $21.4 million. What we did develop was the second option, the subcommittee did, and it is to distribute it in two blocks of allocations. The first one would be 50% of it based on the workload from October 1, 2015 through March 31, 2016. The second distribution that would occur in January of 2017 is to examine the workload from April 1, 2016 through September 30, 2016. And one of the pieces of information that we gleaned is that many of the counties and courts are actually at different stages of implementation, and some of the counties have allocated specific funding for the public defender's office, let's say, to review the previous cases that were filed. Many of the cases, of course, where the person was in custody, those have been dealt with, but there's this huge backlog of cases that the courts/counties are just now getting their hands around. So the idea would be to focus on those petitions within very precise periods of time that, in essence, would be much more reflective of the volume that each of the courts was experiencing. So the option two was the option that was being recommended by the subcommittee, again, to accommodate any fluctuations and filings during that period of time. And one additional notation is that we had been monitoring the workloads that had been submitted to the Judicial Council staff, and it appears that the data seems pretty solid and pretty reliable. There hadn't been any questions or concerns at the numbers that were submitted. So I think looking at the most current information and the new basis for identifying the code for each of the courts to be contained in the
future. And just to add to what David said, I think one way to look at it philosophically is that there's new money to do work. So I think option two also reflects by using the most recent available data what the evolving workload is.
Table, I will move the adoption of subcommittee option number two.
Okay, Mike Roddy moves adoption, seconded by Rebecca Fleming. Any further discussion or questions? So at this point, it would be to adopt the recommendation that item two, which is essentially splitting the distributions of the Prop 47 funds over those time periods, as mentioned, be approved by this body.
One question. How comfortable are we with the accuracy of the data received by this court?
Well, maybe Patrick can speak to that.
We work with the court, so there's a lot of going back and forth with the court to try to make sure that the data is correct. And like David said, there's more consistency now. I think at the beginning, we think what the option was to start in November, was at the beginning, right after the proposition was passed, there was, some courts just were not able to have resources for reporting other courts.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, there had not been any concerns in data that had been reported. And again, that's the basis for the petitions for the funding that was allocated for this current budget year, or actually last budget year. So I think the data quality seems pretty good.
Okay, any other questions or concerns on the motion and the second? What did I see another?
The issues with these courts that are going to issue new case management systems with data collection?
Up until this point, there has not been.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, or concerns on this pending motion? All right. So now regarding item three, recommendation two, that be adopted, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Aye on the phone. Any opposed? Hearing none. Thank you very much. We're now moving to item four on the agenda, which is presented by Colin Simpson and Patrick, who are both here with us, a trial court funding allocations, trust fund allocations, pardon me. Can you give them a moment to reconfigure, or do you want to just talk from there?
I don't want to talk to you about that. So
okay, good. Jerry Saunders has joined us. Her plane arrived. Item four, it's at page 20 of your materials, and again, it's trial court allocations for general court operations and specific costs. The recommendations are set forth beginning at page 20 through page 22, and that's recommendations 1 through 7B.
So, again, on page 22 through pages 28, you'll see the rationale for the seven recommendations, but in general, the way to describe these are basically all either asking you to either carry over prior year ongoing allocations that were made by the Judicial Council, that would be recommendation one. We're asking you to make allocations based on actual costs reported by the courts, which is related to recommendation two. Or we're asking you to make a recommendation related to allocations based on methodologies that are already approved by the Judicial Council, and that would relate to recommendations 3, 4, 5, and 6. 7 is an optional consideration, basically stating that the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, though it has already made recommendations to the Judicial Council that were all approved on June 24th related to certain reimbursements and certain programs under what's called Program 30, which is Judicial Council, that if the committee would like to actually revisit those, they could also choose to do that. And so that's basically what recommendation 7 is saying, is that if you would like to, you can revisit that, but it's not required. So those are, in general, those were the items. Now, as it relates to the rationale, for recommendation 1 is on page 22. For recommendation 2, which is related to benefits, and that's not only the 15-16 benefits, but also the previously unfunded portion related to 12, 13, 13, 14 benefits. That's recommendation 2. That's on pages 22 through 24. Recommendation 3, which is related to security allocations, and there's two components to that. There's a portion that was funded through BCP, and there's a portion of that that's funded through the general court operations, like the $20 million that was provided in the Budget Act, and based on Judicial Council approved methodology, a portion of that is allocated to security. So that's recommendation 3. Recommendation 4 is the allocation related to WAFM. So this would be the remaining portion of that $20 million for general court operations. So after the security allocation, which is roughly $400,000, $19.6 million is allocated based on judicial counsel approved methodology pursuant to WAFM. So that's recommendation 4. Recommendation 5 is related to the allocation of the funding floor adjustment. So pursuant to judicial counsel approved methodology based on Waltham. Recommendation six is related to the criminal justice realignment finding of $9.2 million. And that's on, and I, you know, I skipped actually referencing the page numbers, but that was on page 28. And that's based on the methodology the judicial counsel approved last year for the allocation of those monies. So we can go through, do you want to go through any of your items before I talk about Waltham in a little more detail?
No, no, no. I think I will wait until there's questions.
Okay.
I'll take questions on any of those items.
So just quickly to speak to the attachments, because I know there are a lot of them. The primary ones that you would want to look at is attachment 4B, which is on pages 31 and 32. This actually provides a summary of all the allocations that are being recommended. So one through six, because seven is optional. So one through six, all the allocations that relate to that are summarized there. So if you look on pages 31 and 32, you'll see those there. The other key attachments that you may want to look at relate to the details of, say, the base allocation, which is recommendation one. That's attachment 4F, and that's on pages 37 and 38. For the benefits, which is recommendations 2A and 2B, you find those on pages 39 through 41, and those are attachments 4G and 4H. For recommendation 3, which is 3A and 3B, which is security, and attachment 4I, that's pages 42 and 43. And then the ones that may generate a little bit more interest in, possibly, is the WAFM allocations and how those monies are being allocated. As it relates to the actual WAFM allocation, so you can see the WAFM need on 44 through 47, but more importantly, how, based on that need, how is the 19.6 being allocated? You'd find that on attachment 4L, which is on pages 51 and 52, and that's recommendation 4. Recommendation 5, which is the funding floor adjustment, that's attachment 4O, and that's on page 66. And last but not least is the criminal justice realignment. If you want to see the detail behind that, it's attachment 4Q, and that's on page 72. Like I said, these are all, in a sense, I wouldn't necessarily say the pro forma, but in a sense, they're all, these are more implementation of already approved methodologies. And so this is not really, these aren't necessarily items that are providing options, but merely providing the values based on what the council has already approved. Are there any questions?
Is there a motion?
I move that we approve 1 through 6.
Sherry Carter moves we approve 1 through 6. Rebecca Fleming seconds. Any questions, concerns, or comments on the pending motion with the second? So, again, for clarification, the motion would be, you said 1 through 6, Sherry?
Because 7
is optional.
That's, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, so with the move, it's moved to approve options 1 through 6. Seconded, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Aye on the phone. Any opposition? 1 through 6 are approved as recommended.
So moving on to 5?
Yep.
Okay, so item 5 begins on page 161. And I believe
this is Judge Poole and Rebecca and Colin.
Yes, so this was considered.
Hold on, Sherry, do you have a question?
Seven.
I'm sorry, you're right.
If you'd like to, yes.
I'm sorry, 7. If it was move 1 through 6, we have to address 7. That's correct.
I just didn't know if you wanted to address what those options were in case anyone wanted to make a motion.
And so basically, for recommendation 7, the options are leave the allocations as approved by the council currently, or be adjusted.
Yes.
That's simple.
I moved to leave them. If we need a motion, maybe we don't.
I don't think you actually need a motion.
But I'm glad it was clarified. So it's clarified by not having a motion. In other words, it is what it is.
And why we do that is that we assume certain things are in the budget, but we try to get as many things sort of taken care of by the council. In the event that the budget is dramatically different, it's just a reminder that we can go back and repose to the council different allocations.
All right, Sherry, thank you very much for clarifying that. Does that?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I understand why you do that.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Now moving to item 5.
So this was an issue that was discussed by the funding methodology subcommittee. recommendation. So the issue presented had to do with new judgeships and how much money should be attached for staffing to new judgeships. And really two concepts emerged, I would say, from the discussion in the subcommittee. The first concept was that the funding we should ask for is not just for staff in a particular courtroom, but rather for the staff that supports all of the activities related to the ultimate decision-making and adjudication by the judge. And the second concept that emerged was that because all courts continue to be underfunded, we should be asking for our WAFA needs and not for something linked to the status of a particular court. And so from that discussion, a formula emerged, which is reflected in recommendation two. Recommendation one is how the funding is distributed.
We discussed a friendly amendment, and no motion's been made yet, and so it's a little bit out of order, but just clarifying concerning 2A, what we're discussing here is the funding, not the ratio. I mean, the ratio has been determined,
right.
And so we're determining the cost of the ratio, and so as I had a discussion and Judge Kuhl came in, I self-appointed myself, because I do that many times, as on the funding methodology subcommittee until somebody could come forward, and Judge Kuhl graciously agreed to do that. So that's why you're wondering about the transition. I fired myself from that self-appointment, luckily for all of you. But in having a conversation with Judge Kuhl and Rebecca, I suggested the friendly amendment to 2A, which would simply say utilize the staff to judgeship ratio currently calculated, I know I'm throwing a lot of this at you, by dividing the most recent total RAS, full-time equivalent FTE need, by the most recent judicial needs assessment as approved by WAC. So WAC approves the ratio, we talk about the cost. So it's a technical amendment, but it's a friendly amendment to 2A, once 2A is moved, unless we just substitute it in. Okay? So...
I'm seeing confused look, Judge Conklin.
What's the confusion?
Let me try again. So the recommendation of the subcommittee is in two parts. Number two is to me logically first. That's the way that the amount of money attached to each new judgeship would be determined. Number one states that the amount of that the money would be distributed according to the law. So that's the basic recommendation. Judge Conklin, I think, is pointing out that in 2A, when we talk about the total judicial needs assessment, that is as determined by the workload assessment.
Exactly. You said it better than I did.
So that's just a clarification. We then have, so that was the recommendation of the funding methodology subcommittee. You'll see 2F stands sort of by itself. So after the subcommittee meeting, we were reminded by staff that when asking for a BCP, typically the branch also asks for funding for judges' compensation. That logically follows, but it's not part of the trial court funding component. And court interpreters for the 4545 fund, some increase might be appropriate for that, as well as shared security, which would not come to the court, but might be an argument that the share of security costs should be increased separate from our court funding. So this was a discussion that took place after the funding methodology subcommittee. It seems consistent with the recommendation, and so we're putting it forward to you as including 2A through F.
Right, and so I appreciate that clarification. The reason F is coming in is in talking to Rebecca and to Judge Kuhl, we want to be true to the recommendation that came out of the subcommittee. And they, frankly, procedurally don't have the power to say, well, the subcommittee's voted, but as the co-chairs, they're going to add in F. They can't do that. So the subcommittee recommends 1 and 2A through E with the friendly amendment to 2A, and then 2F is now before you as essentially a new recommendation today. But my understanding is, in talking to Judge Kuhl and Rebecca, 2F is appropriate. So I'm just trying to make sure procedurally we handle this the right way. Judge Earl?
What is the friendly amendment to 2A again?
I'll read it as it was, and the purpose of it is to clarify that WAC determines the ratio. And so the language we discussed was, utilize the staff to judgeship ratio currently calculated by dividing the most recent total resource assessment study full-time equivalent need by the most recent total judicial needs assessment as approved by WAC. So it clarifies the judicial needs assessment is the one that's approved by WAC, that ratio, which is what it's a point of clarification. Okay?
Well, I hate to do this twice, but I will move to one and two. A through F.
With the amendment.
With the amendment, yeah, that's just a clarification.
Second that.
Okay, so a motion by Sherry Carter, second by David Yamasaki to approve on page 163, 2A through F. With the friendly amendment to 2A, I know this gets really technical, and I can tell by the looks on your faces that you're hoping lunch has arrived, but it's just for clarification so that we are taking action on what is within our purview. Any further discussion on the motion by Sherry Carter with a second from David Yamasaki? All right. Jose?
You know, this is so technical that I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. How did the formula for the BCP
see when it was submitted. How did you arrive at those numbers? Can you kind of walk me through, you know, that component, that staffing component? Did you use the same methodology that we had with RAS?
So as it relates to the 15-16, it's the methodology that's actually recommended in QA. So that was the same methodology. Now as it relates to, and this is also, we provide more detail on this in the background, as it relates to the most recent BCP, the 16-17, they used a smaller ratio, not because they felt it was more appropriate, but was because they felt that it would not receive funding at that higher level. And so they actually noted in the BCP that this would not meet the full staffing needs of the court, and that they would have to come back and address the basically request additional funding. So for the most recent one, it was more of a case of, I don't know if you call it expedience, but it was just what would be, you know, what level did they think they could get funding. And so they adjusted it, but they also recognized, they actually stated that, you see, this is not to set a precedent, this is not to define what our staffing need is, this is merely a compromise. So that's the methodology. And as it relates to the very first methodology that was used for that, it has been used for so many years. It basically identified, in that instance, it was actually very specific to classification. So it actually identified specific classification needs, like how many clerks, et cetera. And so that has been used for many, many years. So I don't actually know historically exactly how they calculated it. It was based on a survey, or that information is not clear because it's been around for so long. But that was the original one. But the most recent version tied to the methodology currently being recommended.
And so do you judge it complement that we had before, would they be impacted as well, or would WAFM have taken care of those? In other words, if a court received this funding for new judgeship prior to 2014,
in the past it was, now they didn't actually state how it would be allocated. So, you know, for the 15-16 BCP and the 16-17, they didn't actually state how it would have been allocated. So I would be speculating, but based on what did happen when they funded the 06-07 judgeships. It was allocated directly to those courts where they did the estimates with cost. So I'm guessing that may have been, but I can't really state. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
We only got for the 07 for 8159. We only
right.
got that 1 month of funding.
No, that was the 07-08.
No, that was for that was 07. Anyway, but in the BCP, though, we do actually state that the Judicial Council would determine the allocation of the funding, so it was left open to the council to decide on how the funding would be allocated.
David Yamasaki.
Well, I was just going to say that going back to the 06-07, WAFM would true up the information, just like a judge that was appointed to the court 15 years ago. As workload fluctuates, even if there was a separate allocation for judicial appointment in 06-07, it's in the pot of money that basically is part of the WAFM reallocation formula. So it's not necessarily staying with that respective court.
Right. So, and that's actually one thing that we actually, or that was addressed in the report, is that to say that, you know, there is one consideration that basically, because in essence all the base funding is allocated based on WAFM with the one exception, which is specific costs. And so we did contemplate that, or that was contemplated and addressed in the report, stating that the exception probably did not apply in this case, and so it would be reallocated. That makes most sense, reallocation based on WAFM.
So even though those judgeships were pre-WAFM, as you said, WAFM came in later and it just trued up the allocation of that and everything else. So it's a good way to put it.
And I've noted that we're not dealing with the full facility funding that were attached to some new judgeship. Would that be ongoing, continued? Like there were new judgeships that had some facilities component in the past. BCP would be worked on both sides, so that
facility needs would be identified.
That's 2E. If you see 2E, it addresses that specifically.
So the staffing components would apply to E, applied with the WAFM approach, and then facilities would fall into the other methods that we have for dealing with the facility funds or the court interpreters funds or security, whatever the, it happened to be, whatever the money was that happened to come with that.
Okay, so moved and seconded 1, 2A through F with a friendly amendment to A. Any additional discussion, questions, or concerns? All in favor of the motion, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. So, therefore, on page 163, with the friendly amendment to 2A is approved and passes. Well, you folks are being so efficient, we're 45 minutes ahead of time. So we have a couple options. We've got item 6 to go and item 7 to go. I don't know if food is here yet. We're supposed to eat after item 5. Is food here? All right. Food is here. So I would propose that we're ahead of time, but we try to stay ahead of time or not on schedule, so we break quickly and everybody take a little bit of time to eat, but we start right back up at noon, which gives you about 25 minutes to grab food, to relax. But we start back up at noon with 6 and into 7. Again, I'm not trying to rush anything, but I've had quite a few people comment that they have planes and other things, and they'd really appreciate it if we leave early rather than late. So let's break for lunch, and if you could please all be back in your seats, ready to pick right up again straight at noon, that'd be appreciated. We'll go off the recording.
This meeting is now being recorded.
And we are now to item 6 on the agenda. Item 6 is found beginning at, pardon me?
73.
Page 73. And it is entitled the proposed schedule for WAFM-based reallocation of remaining historical-based allocation. We have the benefit of remaining on our committee and having in the room today Judge Earl and others who were, to say instrumental for WAFM is an understatement as well. I think they're the genesis of WAFM and the rollout of WAFM. And that the contemplation of this item is that work continue in the sense that it was, and Judge Earl can probably explain this better than I can, but the original contemplation was funded up to a 50%. And proposal would actually roll that and make WAFM in the time period set forth 100% rollout. So it would take us beginning in 18-19 and each consecutive year thereafter the additional 10% reallocation. And the actual recommendation is set forth on page 76 until WAFM is essentially fully rolled out, which I had a conversation with Judge Earl over the lunch hour, and I think the original concept was no, that it'd be 50, but I think this accomplishes a very appropriate goal. Collins present for numbers, and again, I will open this up and encourage any discussion of any concerns folks have for the recommendation is set forth on page 76, that again, beginning 18-19 until fully allocated each fiscal year, an additional 10% is rolled out until WAFM is fully implemented. So if there's a question about numbers, and Stephen can walk, pardon me, Colin can walk through the numbers briefly.
Can I just say, Judge Earl, correct me if, you know, I get the history wrong, but the original WAFM committee did not stop at 50% because it thought it was going to end at 50%. We stopped it there because it was part of one of many compromises that the WAFM committee put together. And the hope was that with the piece of matching dollar for dollar for new funding, would encourage the legislature and the governor to fund the grant because that would then expedite the equalization of the funding level. Even though we'd all be underfunded, it, at least it would be at the same level. So I just want to kind of set that in history, is that it wasn't that we thought it was going to hit 50%. It was because it was a position that we wanted to take that, and I remember Judge Freeman making it, that we want to prove that we'll meet you halfway, you need to meet us halfway, and this is, we'll do it if you add new money as the accelerator, we'll get to an equal funding level faster.
Okay. Thank
committee. Why? What is the impetus for wanting to phase out in this way more rapidly when we still have 2 years to go of the original phasing in? That's the first concern I have. And the other is there's so many uncertainties at the moment. We don't know about new funding. We don't know who the government's going to be in 2018. Sivers are dropping. So why would we do this now rather than 2 years from now?
Well, we're not. And Rebecca can answer this as well. But the recommendation is, in fact, we stay where we are. 18-19 is when the 50% would expire, and then we continue with the 10%.
No, I understand that. But why would we make the decision now as opposed to 2 years from now?
There is a work plan that was established by this group, and it's been modified over the last couple of years, but that was actually a charge to the group as to what will happen when we get to that last year of allocation, and they wanted a plan for that. And so that fell within this fiscal year as our work plan. And so we've been kind of taking them one at a time and working our way down that plan.
We're talking about issues.
Correct.
Did I see another hand? Mike Roddy?
I supported the recommendation in the subcommittee because I think, if nothing else, it continues the progress. It gives us something to plan for. I mean, these future potential allocations, we were going to move ahead with the 40-50% regardless of new money anyway. And I think it's just a better stability to know what the end game is at this point, because that has been a question about what happens when we get to the 50%. So for me, it's really just the idea that it's continuity, stability, something to plan for. If we get new money, we'll get there faster.
Yeah.
At least we know what the end game is.
It's also the basis for other decisions we've been making. Like on the last time we decided that funding for new judges would be allocated 100% to WAFM, and we'd count as new money, so it wouldn't go to the courts to get the new judgeships. It would go into WAFM and go wherever the workload is. But we're not at 100% funding by WAFM, and so we're pretending, kind of, that we're at 100% in making other decisions. And so it's time to decide that we are actually going to that point.
And I think on dependency, for instance, we're rolling that out. I mean, that's 100% at rollout, too. So, Judge Earl, we talked about concerns or perspectives on this?
No, I mean, I think Sherry is correct that when we came up with WAFM, and that process was not an easy one, and there were clearly courts that were going to suffer under WAFM, as we see currently happening, and we did, I think, for lack of a better term, some compromises in order to move an overall fair funded methodology forward. We did stop at 50% for, I think, a couple of reasons, one of which Sherry expressed that we thought if we were in a time of a very dire budget time in the state, and the branch had not was not getting funded, and we thought that if we beyond 50%, we are solving a problem that's really we don't think is ours, and it's the state, and we will not get help from them. But we also were concerned that those courts that were better funded than others, we didn't simply want, as we knew we were squeezing everyone to the middle to try to make it fair, we didn't simply want to have those courts trade places. And so we wanted to make sure that to the middle, the courts that were better funded weren't going to dip below that line of that funding line, which is not sufficiently funded, but where everyone was at. I think in looking at the materials and the charts that have been put together, I don't think going further with that does that. I don't think it necessarily swaps positions. I think it continues to squeeze, and I think that will continue to hurt until we see more.
Sherry Carter and then David Yamasaki.
I was just going to say, when we all get to the same funding level, there will be years where it'll adjust. It's based on averages. But as you all know, I came from the federal system and worked on their funding methodology, which is very similar. And it adjusted every year based on your filings. I'm looking at Sam. So, I mean, it isn't that you give above and below. It's just going to adjust. And that's what it'll be at that point, is an adjustment based on filings. So I don't think that we should think that just because some are going to gain and lose as we move forward, it's going to stay that way. Once we're all at that same level, it will do some adjustments, but because we use three-year averages, it's not going to be a huge calculating line.
So I'm with Judge Saunders on this one. We entered into this arrangement, if you will, to address a deficiency of funding that the legislature had basically imposed on the courts. We're not going to give you any more money until you change the funding methodology. And to go beyond this five-year plan, I will tell you that, you know, we, and I am in the same situation here in Santa Clara as many other courts, have been devastated in terms of the fiscal reductions that we have sustained. We have not received one new trial court trust fund dollar since this whole process started. And I have to staff departments with judges that I don't have the money to provide. So it is not a remedy to continue with this reduction formula that has not even completed yet. And so I think it's way premature to begin looking at increasing the reductions in the courts that have been given millions of dollars towards this redistribution model. Let's finish this thing first before we start tinkering with it. And it is I'm surprised that this conversation is already starting. You know, we've got 2 years left. Maybe we can revisit it at a later point in time. But we had anticipated seeing a lot more money coming into the branch than we have. And until that happens, I honestly don't think that it is prudent for us to change this agreement that has been in place for 3 years, going into the fourth year, until this thing is worked itself out, because we're even discovering some things with the current model that seems, at least from my perspective, inequitable.
Okay. Well, I just join Mr. Yamasaki on that point. We are a donor court, and when I was on the council, I voted for WAFM. I thought the statement from the presenter that he's my little brother, he ain't that heavy. The courts that are donor courts have an obligation to help the courts that are less well-funded. When WAFM was enacted, I don't think anybody had any idea when they were at the table relative to WAFM that the funding challenges for us would continue for, what is it, 5-6 years at this point, kind of no end in sight. And at this point, my court's mysteriously pinching because of the increase of WAFM reductions from year to year, as well as the other challenges that we're faced in terms of unfunded mandates, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not saying that we're in worse shape than the courts that have been reallocated. We are making some headway in terms of new money, but obviously not enough to make up the gap. I agree with Mr. Yamasaki that we need to take some time to really think this through in terms of where we want to go. Have some time to work with our courts, those courts that will be affected by continuing the WAFM methodology out to 100% shared.
Judge Cope?
Can I make a motion?
Yes.
I move the adoption of the recommendation on page 76.
Judge Cope has made a motion to adopt the recommendation on page 76, which is set forth. I won't read it to you, assuming it's the rollout that we've described.
I second it.
Second by Sherry Carter. Did you have an additional comment?
When you get to discussion.
Okay, so now any further discussion on the motion and second? Mr. Plum?
I actually agree with David and Judge Herman. All things being equal 2 years from now, I would vote for this because I actually agree that this is the direction that we should be going in. On the other hand, I don't see any real advantage to taking this action now. I mean, really, what do we gain? We all know where it's headed. We can all plan for it accordingly. Other than just fulfilling a requirement that's on a work plan for somewhat arbitrary reasons at this point, I just don't see what this gets us in reality. You know, it's possible to something that we may want to do something totally different based upon the changing circumstances 1 or 2 years from now.
Sure. Dr. Chair, by the way, I apologize. I gave Rebecca a new husband because I said Mr. Fleming as Rick Feldstein. I just want to clarify the record who was speaking, and now Dr. Sherry.
Okay. I hate to admit I agree with my colleagues, but I actually think the advantage, Rick, is that courts can plan that are both upsizing and downsizing, and I do think that's really important to do. I think it's important for the branch to know where we're going with its level of funding, and I do want to clarify just a couple of things since I was on the Waltham Committee, and just want to make sure. We never had any promises of new money. There was never a discussion that we thought there would be new money. So this was a plan to reallocate existing funds to support work. And it is state money that supports state workload. Nobody's doing anybody any favors. Nobody's helping anybody out. This is state money that supports state workload. And so I just want to clarify what the intent was. It is to ensure that the state money is allocated based on workload because we all do the same work, and that's what the intent was. So that's, you know, I support it, and I think that we need to stand strong and where the branch is going.
Any additional comments or concerns? Tanya.
This will be a surprise to Sherry. I'm going to support Sherry's comments and agree with her. What does it get us, Rick? I think what it gets us, and I'm starting to feel the pain on it, but I think what it does is equalize that amount of funding that is out there so that we're all in the same boat. And so maybe we don't have as many, some people have more holes in their boat now than they did before, but I think the intent all along was to redistribute the money so that everybody had an equal share based on work, which is really the only true method that we have in order to be funding.
I guess I'm stating the obvious, but I don't think this, if approved, any way sends the message that we're happy with our current funding or that it should not change, and I think that message needs to continue to be emphasized. So this appears to be appropriate path, and somebody had their hand up. Mr. Yamasaki again.
Let me just add one additional point. When we started this WAFA funding methodology, we were faced with many courts who were closing doors, closing courtrooms, reducing hours to the public, and with the implementation of WAFA, we've seen additional resources coming in the branch. We've seen funding shift from court to court, and as a court that is less under-resourced, we're continuing to have to close doors, close courtrooms, because we simply do not have the funding. So we've essentially flipped places, essentially. And it was not okay back then for courtrooms to close. It is certainly not okay now that courts have to close because funding continues to shift. So let's you know, accept the fact that closing courts is not a good thing. Whether we need to reopen or we need to continue to have courts open, they're both priorities. And I don't think that, courts that would be facing additional closures is the direction that we should be going until there's more money to help us get to this appropriate funding level. So I think I'm going to vote no on this particular motion because I don't think that it is time to begin tinkering with the formula until there are additional assurances of more money.
Robbie?
When we voted to implement Waltham, whether we expected new money or not, and assuming we don't get any new money, I think we all signed up for being equally mediocre in an underfunded judicial branch. Let's call it what it is. Let's put it out on the table. Let's move on with it. I don't see any set of circumstances that would reasonably lead this committee to vote to suspend it and or stop at 50% when we get there. If that had been the case, those votes might have precluded Waltham in the first place. And so for me, it's just a realization that let's call it what it is, let's get it out on the table. I agree we should not stop advocating aggressively, very aggressively, super aggressively for the money we need. It distresses me that we can't get the other two branches to fully buy into the workload concept that we put so much time and effort into. Maybe that was where we continue to double down on our efforts. But at the end of the day, when we started down this road, there was no way we were going to get halfway there and decide, oops, it's not going to happen. Or we're going to slow it down because we don't have enough money. I don't see the votes there to do that kind of cessation of activities. And so for me, it's just putting the final chapter to the book that we started.
Any additional comments? Judge Earl.
So I agree with Mike that I don't know how we justify stopping at 50% at this point. I don't know what we tell people when they say, but you only went partway. And you still have this big gap between funding between courts, and you could have addressed it in the city.
I get the argument, but it just feels like we're at the Donner Party, sitting around the table as we're feasting on each other. And I get the original was a five-year glide path, shifting the burden and maybe pressure on the legislature in the first to fund, and it has materialized other than a nickel a year. And I, quite frankly, I appreciate Mike's change in perspective, because when this first hit, I mean, you were getting hit hard too. I get that, and still are.
And I'm not happy with
I get
the whole proposal, but that die was cast 3 years ago.
I'm struggling with, we spent lots of time discussing this, and our resolution was 5 year 50, and then this was sold, in essence, initially to everybody as we went, took our show on the road. I get, and I understand this. I'm just telling you, this, I get the conflict here. I'm looking at the red numbers here, which are devastating, and assuming we're going to get a nickel a bump every year thereafter, that's not going to do anything for some of these courts. Devastating.
Okay. Sorry, were you done?
Yeah, I think I am.
So one thing that's addressing this now that speaks to me is that it does allow us to plan and to deal with this as a whole. And certainly there are courts getting hurt by this, and then there's courts that are getting helped by this. So there was a reason that this group put this on the work plan for this year, and that is so that at the last minute when we're trying to make a decision that changed course of action or, at the last minute made a decision that wasn't consistent with what we've been doing. And so I think there was a reason we addressed it so that we could have some continuity and move forward. But I think it allows us to have to start creating those arguments of what if some new money doesn't come. It's much like Judge Kaufman's comments on the dependency. It's time that this will allow us between now and when gives us time to plan and wait and what if new money comes forward. Right now we're talking in so many scenarios because, well, if new money comes and if it doesn't, we're at this percent funding and this one. It brings us to a level of equality that we all share in, which is not great, but it allows us to move forward in somewhat a more united approach. And so that's what this speaks to for me, is the opportunity to walk forward with more of a united approach, whether it's for new money or for, a streamlined approach or however we do it, but it's one voice.
Judge Kuhl, did you have a comment? Okay. Any additional comments, concerns, or questions?
I have a comment on the phone. This is Joyce Heinrichs again. I do support it. I think it's important that what happens at 100% in the future is a real picture that we give to the legislature. If they don't continue to give new money in regards to the matter, I don't disagree that it will be painful if we don't get new money. But I also think that it allows for planning ahead of time to be as innovative as we can possibly be when we identify those things. But I think that if we're going to base it on workload and how that happens, then we have to go this direction and understand that if there isn't new money, then other things are going to have to happen that are critical. But I think the legislature has to see that, and then we have to be our own best advocates to make those things happen in the future. But I think we have to set this path to make those other things fall into place, being honest about it, about what that means when it's based on a workload model. So that's my comment.
Very good. And I believe Jose Guillen.
Just as a matter of change management, one option to consider may be to send out perhaps some communication, a survey to all the courts to say, to telegraph, we are about to implement an unfinished business. Because I think no matter how we fight it, it is not a change that we have started. And I think that giving the courts heads up may bias greater buy-in internally. The other one is, and I don't know the answer, but by taking this decision right now, are we telegraphing to the legislature things that we may not want to? For instance, Hertzberg 881, who, you know, substantially is going to change the way we're relying on fees and fines, as we've seen it in our facilities. So there's a lot of changes that could substantially even hurt us more. And are we, by taking this, telegraphing some message to them to do more? I don't know the answer, but, you know, perhaps those that are closer to the Capitol may say, you know, are we sending a different message than what we are intending to send to the legislature?
Anything additional? All right, I'm going to ask Stephen, I think based upon the comments in the room, for a roll call vote on this, just so everybody has a chance to express their individual votes. So we'll do roll, and I just want to make sure everybody have a chance to be heard. Any additional comments, questions, or concerns? Okay, we'll call for a roll call vote.
All right, we'll go
ahead. So, I'm sorry, I'll clarify the vote. The vote is to approve the motion, which has been seconded, to adopt the recommendation on page 76 of your materials for the additional rollout, so to speak, of the OPM funding allocation method for the years in question. That being said, Stephen?
The members of the say yay or yes, yay or no. Judge?
Yes.
Judge Barton?
Yes.
Judge Cook?
Yes.
Judge Earl?
Yes.
Judge Good?
Judge Good, are you on the phone?
Judge Herman? Judge Heinrichs?
Yes.
Judge Holland?
Yes.
Judge Kaufman?
No.
Judge Cole?
Yes.
Judge Lee?
No.
Judge Maragonda?
No.
Judge McCabe?
No.
Judge Saunders?
No.
Judge Smith?
No.
Sherry Carter?
Yes.
Rick Selfie?
No.
Becca Fleming?
Yes.
Jenny Grimm?
Yes.
Ian?
No.
Daniel Hammer?
Yes.
Kevin Harrigan?
No.
Jeffrey Lewis?
Yes.
Michael Flanagan?
Mike Rodden?
Yes.
Brian Taylor?
No.
Linda Ramirez-Solis?
Yes.
And Capobianco?
Yes.
Christina Volkers? David Yamasaki?
No.
This was a difficult vote, and it was taken on good faith. And overstating it perhaps, but I think this committee is a microcosm of the courts as a whole, and we're frustrated, and our patience is running thin on our continued voice that funding needs to be a priority for this branch, and it is not. And by marching forward with this WAFM allocation, as I believe is appropriate, which is why I voted yes for it, we're asking that
microphone be heard, for whatever good that does.
Yes. I like the base comment about getting input to the court. Now that the vote has been made to consider sending an email out to the court and getting input that you can share at the council meeting.
Okay. We'll ask to accomplish that in the sense of that all the counties be made aware, all the courts be made aware that this has now been approved and their input concerning it is appropriate, as always.
Wouldn't you do that after the council's approved it? I mean, I'm not really sure what the input is for. I think they need to know once the council's approved it so they can do planning and seek input if there's adjustments or things that can be done. But I personally think sending out a survey now is council productive. I think they need to be aware so that they can plan once the council approves it, assuming the council approves it. But I'm not really sure what the survey would possibly ask them.
Is it more for input to give to other courts? You can provide comments to the
district. Yeah, as a matter of information, the council is going to want to know the vote because they want to know, is this something that there is you know, widespread agreement, or is this one that's created division amongst them? And that can be good, meaning if it's a tough decision or tussling with it, that's fine. I'm probably going to send something out to the PJs because they usually want to know what the PJs think about this. And Rick probably is going to do the same thing with the CEO.
And that would probably be fine, but I don't really think a survey, I don't know, I just don't know how helpful it would be.
And I'm not sure, I think maybe ultimately that we should encourage input as to folks that show impact, if nothing else, to strengthen our voice of the need for more funding.
Sure.
But I think also the vote before the council is going to be sooner rather than later, and I'm not sure we would simply have time to accomplish the survey. Okay.
Right, and I fully listen to you for this. The message that you want to bring, I think, is the important issue, that this is such a divisive position we're in, that if we're feeding on ourselves or one another, that it has to be, funding has to be the priority. We have to know that going forward. I think that if the PJs weigh in and the CEOs weigh in, those comments can then go along with this to show how, you know, kind of a balance that's not a huge differential in what we're doing.
Not to be argumentative, but I think our branch has made funding its top priority. It's not the priority of the other two branches.
No,
just a subtle distinction, but the funding has been number one every year for the last 4 or 5 years.
Right. And I'm sure the chief is listening closely to these comments, but my comments were intended to clearly reflect frustration towards the other branches of government that are not listening.
Thank you. I'll just clarifying that.
And I was kidding about the chief. I'm sure she has better things to do than this right now. Okay. Thank you all. And again, that I think that discussion was more than appropriate. If anybody wants to email me comments about additional messages to deliver, I'm more than happy to consider those. Okay. Item 7, being again well ahead of schedule, is our final item on the agenda concerning BCPs for 2017-18. It's sat out page 95 of your material. Lucy is here, Ms. Fogarty is here with us to discuss these. There's a little bit of a background on this, as I'm sure you remember. I think Judge Earl is the one that led the discussion on this as well. When we originally were asked to develop and prioritize BCPs from TICPAC's perspective, and that's what's set forth now on Table 1 of page 95. So those BCPs were developed. Survey was then sent out for those 7 BCPs, and we were asked as committees, as a committee member, to rank them, and the rankings are set forth in the order on Table 1. Additionally, everybody was given the opportunity to provide alternatives. So my proposal for the discussion is that we first consider those BCPs. The recommendation 1 is to either adopt Table 1 in that order, or to readjust those items in Table 1. I think the way Judge Earl did it before, I'm not sure, is we actually used the whiteboard, and I think we just started taking just marks off. So we could, if for some reason we want to reprioritize 1 through 7, do that, and then after that is taken care of and considered, move to Table 2 as Recommendation 2, which, for lack of a better description, would be BCP 8, would be the next most immediate BCP to be considered in the way they've been laid out. Judge Kuhl?
I do remember the discussion last year, and what a great job Judge
Mr. Earle did in organizing it, but I'd like to propose that we do the same thing we did last year with regard to number two. So number two is trial court employee compensation. And we, as I recall the discussion last year, we pointed out that everybody's at a different point in terms of how recently they gave raises. And so if you direct that the money is going to go to employee compensation, you're essentially overriding the bargaining decisions in a sense, and particularly the way it's described in page 96. And so you, and it to me implies that the money is going to be distributed according to essentially how many employees you have, which sure everybody gets 2.5%. And it, what it does is it, I think, focuses the other branches on the fact that we are at different places, and it's because of WAFA, but it's a complicated story. And so I think what we did last, and not necessarily one where I think we want the focus to be. So I think what we did last year was we took trial court operations discretionary funding as our first priority, but amended the description of that to say something like including employee compensation, so that it was clear that one of the purposes of the discretionary funding would be to adequately compensate trial court employees.
We actually took two separate ones, added them together, and then wrote a narrative that added both dollars. So
that's
it wasn't
what I, that's
so
what
the dollars were added to that the discretionary funding was one calculation.
Do these have dollars? They do have dollars. Yes.
And number two is an example. Rather than just as a value of what the executive branch provided was this amount equivalent, but for more discussion about what
I would move that we do it the same way this year, and that we combine those two so that we're not effectively number one focusing attention on the different places that different courts are at in their funding and in their bargaining with their employees, and that the narrative for Department of Finance or whoever is really around the overall need for more funding, part of that need being to keep our employees up with the state employees.
So just so I want to be clear, though, it would be slightly different to last year. You propose that we do one ACP for discretionary funding that would incorporate employee comp, because what we did actually submit, as I said, is a BTP, but it stated X million in discretionary plus X million for employee compensation.
There were two line items on that BCC. Are you proposing $1 ask for discretionary funding that will incorporate employee
Actually, and then when they break it amounts to the same thing in a sense. If you're going to add the two numbers together, they're going to ask for the two numbers.
Exactly. So we have to justify our ask. So we'll have to say we calculated it based upon.
I would not want to do that in such a way that we would somehow be distributing the funding according to 2.5% increase
and
for
if
every
portion. Funding that has been historically would be a WAFA's amount. So even if we add up two amounts, which one is a WAFA amount and one is the COLA amount, the amount would then presumably be just distributed using the WAFA method.
So you're using the magic word motion.
Yes.
Or so are you moving to, as far as recommendation one, to adopt the BCPs that set forth in table one?
What I'd like to do first is to, and I'm assuming that everybody's number one pick is going to be discretionary operations funding, with that assumption inherent in it. Or I would move that the first and the second be combined in such a way that it lists the entire amount, but that it is all articulated as discretionary money.
Okay.
And I could add to that, I guess, that I would, and so combined, I would move that it be.
I have a question before you get to the second.
So there's a motion pending without a second before a question. Go ahead.
Slotko, did we glean anything from our approach this year that might be helpful next year? In light with what Judge Kuhl is saying, we packaged it up in a certain way, obviously didn't work,
Is there something we've learned that maybe we approach it differently?
By the way, the school has talked about as far as everybody being in different places, and some courts have and some haven't been able to provide increases because of the different impacts of WAFM. I think there isn't this understanding of the question is why would everybody need a COLA when not everybody has, you know, folks have given money with their WAFM dollars. So you want us to allocate additional resources to those courts who have gotten money? It makes the argument a little more difficult when not everybody's in the same place. So those courts who haven't been able to either stay neutral or have to reduce because of WAFM are viewed in one way, and those who have provided look differently. And so it's sort of, to me, I think of the message back from them is, you've given COLAs. What do you need to give us that? Here's discretionary money. They kind of use the discretionary argument back to us as that's now, and we don't prescribe how trial courts use the money, and so they could use it any way they choose. And if priority is for COLAs, then that's what it should be used for. And they're not going to tell us that. So here's a pot of money and use it for that. So they haven't been very sympathetic to the needing money for COLAs.
So there's a...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but based on what I have heard over the last number of years, I don't know that any of us want to be dictated how the money could be spent necessarily, that placing it in a position, as Judge Kuhl has said, is combining the money, so it is just a discretionary pot of money, I think is a far greater way to go. And I would second her motion if that's the way it is.
Okay, so there's now a second, and I want to make sure, so now you're only, Judge Kuhl, you're only addressing DCP concepts 1 and 2, correct? So the initial motion is, as I understand it, Judge Kuhl, correct if I'm wrong, combine BCP 1 and 2 into one BCP and essentially entitled Trial Court Operations Discretionary Funding.
Yes, and that be the first priority.
And that's been seconded by Tanya. Discussion, so we're breaking it down to sub-motions. Rick Feldstein, not funny. Okay. Yeah, I agree with Tanya, absolutely. I think we have to be very careful not to open the door to the legislature dictating our hopeful labor relations. And if we start putting these things forward too strongly, that's quite likely what would happen, considering the influence of the unions to the legislature. Also, just a blanket 2% or whatever for that purpose across the state, it's basically a step backwards from WAFA, because it's not that it's money. It would no longer be based upon workload, and it really should go towards workload rather than employee compensation. Let that decision be made at the local level. Okay. Any other discussion on what is the? Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Earl.
I just had a question for Zlatko, and I want to make sure I understand this correctly. So, if 1 and 2 are combined, and it's all labeled as discretionary funding, then all of it must be distributed pursuant to WAFM, unless the governor says something differently.
I mean, that's how we portrayed it. Was even though there may not be components, this is how we didn't want to portray it. We worked with Jake last year on the narrative and provided some sections to make sure that, you know, the message was conveyed consistent with this kind of conversation. But they do know when we add up, well, how did you arrive at the value was this and this, but distributed via WAFM.
But would courts then be free to spend that money however they want? So I the only concern I have is if we need money for and then courts decide not to spend it on that, what does that do?
Presumably, if it were to be approved, and hopefully we would get funding to be approved, it would be discretionary, and so it would be up to each organization on how to use those resources. That's a question they would ask. Well, so if you don't use it for that, what would you use it for?
David, I'm sorry.
So I have a So if a court is receiving an allocation of the trial court trust fund, right, an increase in the allocation, let's say, and money to support a COLA, what happens when the court sustains a reduction in their
reduction, such as the resource quotas. There would never be money that would be available just for that particular purpose. And I get the challenge that you have by locking in a presumed increase by saying this is how much you receive for COLA, and this is working for a child court allocation. There's no resource necessarily that was funding for a COLA because it's going to be recalculated anyway. So I see the benefit of keeping them separate, realizing that it may take the negotiating tool away from the courts, but by combining them, then there's no assurance that a court is even going to receive any money as contemplated by a legislator. They say this is how much you're going to get for a COLA. It's all lumped in together, and a court conceivably can receive nothing.
Because of the reallocated money, the matching reallocation is
that's
greater
right.
than the net share of the new.
What we did last year in the DEP is we calculated the R based upon a 2.5% COLA. When we submitted the BTP, we said it was for employee compensation as a whole. So you could give a COLA or you
such
could increase benefits or it wasn't tied to a cost of living. That's just how we calculated the dollars.
We wanted to provide maximum flexibility for the use of the dollars, but I think David's just an issue of math.
Yeah.
Because you could have a negative all said and done with the full WAFM implications of reallocation plus the matching that go along with WAFM.
Wouldn't
we be in a worse position if it was allocated? Let's just call it that. It's designated for employee salary compensation or what have you, and then through the WAFM, you still end up in a negative position. And what does that do with your labor issue? I think it creates a big problem. Because your labor people are going to be at the table going, but you've got this amount of money that was designated for employee compensation, COLA, NSI, label it what you'd like. And then it didn't materialize because through the WAFM process it was, you know, it was absorbed. And I'm not saying this, I'm just sort of painting the picture because I would rather just see it in a discretionary pot used with whatever calculation we put in there. And if you're able to do it, you're able to do it. And if you can't, you can't.
But that's your whole idea behind negotiations. And you figure out how for that particular purpose. Right now, we don't get a nickel for COLAs. We have to kind of build it into a budget, depending on what we have, but if there is a resource available, at least there's positive money coming in for that purpose. And obviously, it's all about negotiations. There's a cost for everything, and you can do it in benefits or what have you. But to not have a resource earmarked for that, this is something that I think many of for a long time because there has never been any increase just for this purpose. So I think grouping it together, you run the risk of how do you make the resource available to courts that are on the contributing end of things in terms of the long run. So it keeps it at least, you know, you have a pot of money that you can use for that purpose. Right?
And Mike Roddy?
I do absolutely agree with Tanya that it does put us in a bad position because to the extent we put it in there, whether it's a percentage or whatever, however formatted, that's the floor that starts that negotiation. That creates the floor for the union. And that's not necessarily the position I don't think that we want to be in with courts in our negotiations process. We can use it any way that we want. And it is the manager prerogative, and that's just something you manage through in terms of how much for personnel costs versus other costs. And if your formula decreases, if your percentage allocation decreases because your findings are down, you're going to save money in other areas, and you just simply shift it around. That's, again, just part of managing the budget.
All right. We have put ourselves in labor hell for the next 5 to 7 years with continued implementation of WAFM. And I did support the motion, but to get to the 100% because – you know, David is absolutely right. For folks that are reallocating and going down, assuming no new money, any money we do get may not give us enough to negotiate anything. And we're going to see other courts that are getting
infusions of money that have much more labor flexibility, and we just preordained ourselves in that direction unless we find some way to give all of us some minimal amount of money or some level of funding so that we can at least give our employees in our county the same as others giving to their employees. It's going to be another 6 or 7 years that we're going to have to be looking at virtually no increases just because of the continued effects of WAFM. And we put ourselves into this conundrum, and I'm not sure how to get out. I don't want the legislature to micromanage, but I've got to have some ability to give employees a 1 or 2% pay raise if some other county is giving 5%, or some county is giving 9% over 3, and I'm talking about 1%. And it's very difficult to explain to your labor unions those discrepancies because, after all, we're one big happy court. So I don't pretend to have the solution. I don't like the micromanagement, but somehow there's got to be a realization. We need some money to use at the table to negotiate, maybe in some cases, very long overdue salary increases for some of our employees.
Okay, Judge Kaufman and then Judge Cool.
I agree with Mike. I mean, for instance, we're at the floor. If we got a 2 or 2.5% increase, I wouldn't get anything. Now I have to negotiate with my staff and saying, hey, the other court's got it, but we get nothing because we're at the floor. So I'm digging a hole that I'd never get out of.
Judge Cool.
But if we're asking for money specifically for a particular increase, first of all, it ignores the history of given increases or not in the past year. But secondly, you're asking that the legislature direct us how we're going to use our money. So have judges sitting without courtrooms. Don't buy that. I can't staff courtrooms right now. David's looking at closing courtrooms. But we're being told, okay, you don't have the choice of whether it's more important to serve the public to open a courtroom versus to give an increase to employees at this time based on your past history. That's being dictated to us. And I think we need to be able to make those choices, courtroom versus increases, based on where we are as a court.
But, Judge, some of us will have no choice.
Yeah, no choices.
Some of us who are losing money will have no choice about whether to give pay raises or close courtrooms. We're not going to give pay raises because we're already at the bottom of the barrel.
Well, we're assuming that we're going to get some money, right? So this argument assumes that you're going to get whatever this number is, $39.5 million, right? Because that's calculated on the basis of 2.5% increase. Don't you want to have a choice as to how you use that money? As opposed to being told.
I do, but I also have great empathy for the position that the way the reallocations are occurring, unless there's a sufficient amount of money coming in, it's a net loss, and therefore you have nothing to bargain with.
You have nothing.
What you have to bargain with are laying people off or reducing positions or closing courtrooms in order to free up current operational money to pay the fewer people left over more.
We've been there, but if you're going to get money, want it with strings attached or not. But where we've been now, we've gotten no money. $20 million is nothing when it's spread among all of us.
Brian Taylor and then Rick Elson. Brian?
Yeah, I just feel like if we're moving to WAFM with 100%, we've got to provide some relief to Santa Clara, Orange, to San Diego, to the courts that have not been able to give an increase for Stephen Nash, I'm not here, but I regularly hear him talking about Contra Costa having not given an increase for 7 years. We've given an increase. This year we gave an increase, but it was incredibly difficult to give an increase. And I don't have a big problem if there's a 2.5% that's tied to a wage increase because state employees have gotten a wage increase. We see counties giving a wage increase, and many of our courts are not able to do that. And we're putting those courts in a very difficult labor situation if courts are able to give and other courts are not. So we just can't put everything through law.
This is Tino Cuellar. I just joined.
It's just not fair or right for the other courts that are being disbanded right now.
I'm sorry, who just joined us?
This is Justice Cuellar from the California Supreme Court.
Okay. I believe Rick Feldstein. Justice Cuellar, in case you're tracking, the agenda, we're on item 7.
Terrific. Thank you.
Mike, I understand where you're coming from. We're in the same position in my court. I just have to think that
yeah, our hands are tied to some degree, but to the extent we designate this money for increases, we're tying our hands in other areas. For courts that want to just simply add staff and not, and don't have a need to increase compensation, it takes away money for that purpose, for those courts as well. We go in this direction. I think we have to realize that likely the money we get is a zero-sum game, and if we restrict it in the manner that, we're talking about potentially, it's tying our hands across the state in terms of different courts having different needs.
It would be David Yamasaki, and with any other hands?
So I just want to illustrate what this would mean. If you were to add $39 million into the allocation for Santa Clara, there would be no positive gain. It would be an increase in the reduction that we would sustain because of the recalculation. So how do I take that further reduction, which was packaged as an increase for staff increases, right, when it's a net reduction, which is much greater? I'd rather not get the money, quite frankly, because it makes it more difficult to be able to hit that mark. Just insert that number in that formula and see how that number, that for those courts that are facing a negative number, would simply increase even more because it's the math. For every dollar that's added, it's a recalculation of the rules. So that's why I say that from a practical standpoint, for us to just put it into one pot and recalculate it, it will not work out. It has to be separated. Rebecca?
So I have two comments. My first comment is I agree with all the folks who have said, you know, we need the flexibility of discretionary funding, and I think that even comes to employee compensation in my perspective because I want to be able to make those decisions locally depending on what the circumstances are. That being said, if we were to receive money that was pegged for employee compensation, I think because WAFM is not 100% implemented, which I think this is actually a really strong argument for the full implementation of WAFM, I think that we could have some flexibility on this group to look at options of creating an opportunity for those courts to have employee compensation and not roll it into WAFM while we're in this process of saving it. We just approved a delay for a year for dependency so that we could kind of, if nothing else, adjust to the impact of it. So, you know, I wouldn't have an issue supporting some kind of a interim fix to allow those courts to have that employee compensation while we're phasing in WAFM because we're in a no-win situation while we're at midstream. And if we don't 100% implement, we will continue to be in this situation until we do. So I would say that, you know, with employee compensation, if it was defined that way, I think we owe it to the courts as a whole to support that kind of flexibility so that, again, we can speak with one voice and not be cannibalizing each other.
Is there another hand? So currently the motion pending is initial consideration of combining items 1 and 2 on table 1 to 1 VCP. That's the scope of this motion at this point. It does not remove item 1 or item 2 from a VCP, and depending on the outcome, it doesn't change the priority yet. So the motion that's been moved by Judge Kuhl and seconded by Tanya is the initial recommendation of this committee would be to combine item 1 and 2 as a single VCP. And then we will vote as to whether or not, I don't think it's the motion's part of that, is to rank that as number 1 or to re-rank items 1 through what would then be 6.
Judge, so you said and remain in
the number 1. Okay, I'm sorry, remain in the number 1. Okay, no, that's, you're right. No, I'm glad you clarified that. So currently it would remain in number 1. So the motion is combine 1 and 2 to remain as the number 1 BCP concept to be approved.
Can I offer a friendly amendment?
Yes.
So I don't support the motion for the reasons that some of my colleagues have expressed, but I just wondered if perhaps with the definition for trial court employee compensation, there was a comment about if you tie it specifically to COLA, does that prevent using that money to hire a new employee? So I'm wondering if there's a way to broaden the definition of employee compensation so we don't limit ourselves to what that's spent on.
And last year we
we left it open to things such as not it shall be.
Okay.
And that was why I just said we worked with Jay to ensure that there was the maximum flexibility because you have different needs and these well let folks know there this is some of the things on the menu.
So perhaps we don't need the friendly amendment if we all are on the same page that it's employee compensation, period.
Well, and I think the sense of it should be same as last year, essentially. Same explanation and advocacy as a subcategory of the greater discretionary
funding. Any questions, comments, or concerns? So we'll try a voice vote and see what happens. We may have to do a roll call. But all in favor, I think we're just going to have to do a roll call. There's been a lot of different voices in the room. I don't want to waste our time. So we'll do a roll call on the first motion to combine BCPs 1 and 2 as to the number one BCP to be recommended to this committee.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Judge Barton?
Yes.
Judge Cole? Judge Good? Judge Herman?
Yes.
Judge Heinrich?
Yes.
Yes. Judge Kaufman?
No.
Judge Quinn?
Yes.
Judge Lee?
Yes.
Judge Kaufman?
Yes.
Judge McCabe?
No.
Judge Saunders?
Yes.
Judge Smith?
No.
Sherry Carter?
Yes.
Judge Feldstein?
Yes.
Rebecca Fleming?
Yes.
Tammy Gray?
Yes.
Jose, yes. Daniel Hammett?
Yes.
Kevin Harrigan?
No.
Jeffrey Lewis?
Yes.
Michael Flynn? Michael Rodgers?
No.
Brian Taylor?
No.
Linda Rosario?
No.
Anna Rin-Bianca?
Yes.
Yes. Chris Volkers? David Yamasaki?
Yes, 9, no. So that motion carries. So, Justice Cuellar, I'm just assuming you're calling in. Perhaps it's an incorrect assumption. Did you want to make a comment on any of the proposed VCPs?
Yes, I would love to, and I will be very brief because I know you have a lot on your agenda. So if you have just a few minutes, I would like to direct your attention to the VCPs involving language access. Thank you very much. I know you have a lot before you, so I'll really be quite brief. The context here is that we have a continuing major access to justice challenge, but we're turning the corner, and we very much appreciate the support of this committee in the last round of funding. We expect that our needs for this year reflect that, you know, this is not just about resources and that we are really happy to get a very large infusion of resources from our last request. And now it's really about trying to keep the momentum we have and trying to provide the support for our trial courts, especially to be able to do what they need to do on language access. So our BCP concept currently identifies 8 items, and in response to feedback, we recommend prioritizing number 1, a statewide recruitment initiative for qualified bilingual staff and court interpreters, number 2, administrative support and non-VRI technical equipment to help support language access. And then the training and signage grant program is next, followed by standards and training for bilingual staff and court interpreters, the VRI pilot implementation, form translation and multilingual videos, development and maintenance of a living toolkit, and monies for the task force. And I just want to highlight 3 of these items in particular, because all of them are important to us, but these in particular will give you a flavor of what we're thinking about. Number 1. Statewide recruitment initiative. The basic idea here is we can't do civil expansion if we don't have new interpreters, but also for all the language access challenges that involve stuff that happens outside the courtroom, bilingual staff are really crucial. Now, we know that this is not something that we can simply press a button and solve, but we've thought long and hard about what it will take to try to change our ability to recruit folks into the branch who have the special expertise, and we're requesting funding for that purpose. Second, I wanted to highlight the administrative support and equipment to help courts language access expansion. This is really directly in response to what we've heard from courts across the state, and especially from CEOs who are concerned that all the extra resources that we have for interpreter reimbursement really don't necessarily cover all the things that they actually need to do civil expansion and related matters. So headsets that interpreters sometimes greatly benefit from, that's not covered by the reimbursements that are available under what used to be the 4545 fund. So we want to be responsive. We want to make sure that we provide something that will help trial courts address this. Training and signage grant program for trial courts. We have gotten tons of terrific ideas from across the state in terms of signage, training, what will help with language access needs, particularly outside the courtroom. There's no way to support all the good ideas that we've heard about, but we think we have a really great opportunity if we have resources to at least have a grant program that can let the best, most compelling ideas be supported and then let the rest of the state learn from that. Last but certainly not least, I want to highlight VRI. Now, this obviously has taken some careful planning, and we know that there's going to be a lot of work to do to get this pilot program to work effectively, and we're very committed to getting that done the right way. We've tried to keep costs down in a variety of ways, but we still are very much hoping for some crucial support to get that pilot program to run the way it has to run. There are other items, obviously, but I'm going to stop there and just be available for any questions if you have any questions.
Justice Cuellar on what is proposed BCP number 6, language access plan implementation of a total of $8.3 million as approved. All right, Justice Cuellar, you swayed everybody, but there's no questions in the room.
That sounds terrific.
Continue the discussion now, and just to clarify, what has happened now is BCPs 1 and 2 have been combined into one BCP, and the motion has been approved that should be the first BCP to be recommended. So the next would then to consider what are numbered 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in that order as priorities to be recommended for BCPs. I'll consider that motion or any alternative motion. Or neither. Well, we have to do something. Okay, so Brian Taylor has moved that we now adopt 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in that order as recommended BCPs.
Okay.
Second by Tanya. Any additional discussion on what that would be modified recommendation 1 based upon the fact that 1 and 2 have now been combined? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion to adopt remaining, and I'm just going to, for consistency purposes, numbered 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, but they'll renumber 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 as BCPs in that order to be approved, to be suggested to the council. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Hearing none, we have now adopted recommendation 1 with that modification. So we now move to the next discussion of essentially, now that we've ranked those are our top ranks, what's our next immediate suggestion from alternatives provided. You have in front of you 6 alternatives that were suggested and the number of responses, rankings, and votes as to each of those. So the discussion would be, do you want to adopt any of them? Do you want to rank them? Anything beyond what we've already provided? Would it water down our BCPs to add more, or should that matter? Sherry Carter.
I have one I mentioned in Blocko. I think that we have an area that would be, so in our civil assessments currently, there's $48 million that the legislature failed to backfill as a fine and fee hole. I don't remember what year it was back when the Trial Court Act went into place. I can't remember, but there was five or so times. times where the counties would collect information about what they were losing under the new trial court act as fines and fees, and the legislature filled the hole. The last time the counties came and said, we lost civil assessment money because civil assessments now go to the courts and not to the counties, the legislature failed to fill that hole of $48 million. And they, at that time, the legislature authorized the courts to charge $300 for civil assessment instead of $250. I think that's an opportunity for a VCP for that $48 million, especially recognizing that civil assessments are significantly reduced and are probably going to go away, maybe will be going away, and that $48 million will be a hole to the trial court trust fund if it isn't filled with civil assessment. So I think that is a VCP that we should look at, because it was under the trial court act that the counties came and indicated that they had lost the money. The legislature failed to fill the hole. The legislature gave the judicial branch the ability to make up the money by increasing civil assessments, and the civil assessments are going down and maybe going away, and that is a debt of the branch. So I would propose that this is an opportunity for us to seek that $48 million as a VCP as well, because it will be a debt if civil assessments go away.
So is that a motion?
Well, so that would be a motion if anybody, you know, understood what I just said. You have to be in the weeds like I am with the civil assessments, but...
I'll second that motion. So is that incorporated into existing?
I would enlist it as item 8.
Gotcha.
So be next in priority after the 7. And by the way, we're going to go back for discussion. Those 7 that have been ranked, we are going to engage in a brief discussion about amounts within those now that we've ranked them. But before that, we now have a motion to add as the next immediate VCP, which would actually now be VCP number 7, is the way we number them, for a civil assessment ask of $48 million.
And specifically related to the legislature's failure to fill the hole back in 2000 when the counties identified it as a fine and fee revenue drop.
I think that's a particularly important part, because unlike some of our VCPs, that is very easily documented,
right,
and it's very specific,
right,
and it involves them. And so I think that that's one that actually is...
They created the whole...
It,
you need
it,
to fill
they
the
did,
hole.
And it will be an imminent threat if still assessed this way.
And work continues, by the way, from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee to try to unravel the lack of civil assessments. Just so everyone knows.
Quite frank, I'm not sure we will ever get unraveled if we don't address that.
Okay, so any further discussion, comments, or questions on the motion that VCP, now number 7, would be the $48 million ask as proposed? Moved and seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Okay, so I believe that addresses the second recommendation, but the second recommendation is what's our next most immediate VCP? I would like to go back, however, for clarification within the 6 VCPs that we've now talked about, to put Judge Cool.
How does this appear to you on the agenda here, the triple assessment? And if I looked at this list, solving this problem would be, I think, very significant to the person's bottom line. And I will put a couple of these, and I don't know whether you want to take that up. It just wasn't on the agenda. I think because of the work that we the working group of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, we have more of a focus on this as an imminent problem. So I don't know if you want to reconsider it. I would put it higher.
So you're, not to speak for you, but you speak very well for yourself, but your motion is to, in fact, insert civil assessments within the 1 through 6 as a higher ranking than 6.
I would put it after you, Judge Shipp.
To put it as what would now be 4.
Make it 5.
Hold on. 4, 5, negotiation?
Well, they're now renumbered.
It's now...
I always make it between new judgeships and self-help, whatever that is.
4. Okay. Discussion about inserting what has now been approved, an approved VCP request of $48 million to address the civil assessment hole up to ranking number 4, immediately below new judgeships, above self-help, language access, and increased cost for court facilities.
Second.
Motion seconded by Tanya. Any further discussion? So the motion is now to essentially complete the table for seven entire requests and make this request number four. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so now we do have seven BCPs in ranked order. Number one is the combination of trial court operations and employee compensation. Number two is court-appointed dependency counsel. Number three is new judgeships. Number four is civil assessments. Then five, self-help. Six, language access. Seven, court facilities. We do have a little bit of time, and I'm just opening the discussion up, not to re-rank them, but just to numbers, because I think we need, as best we can, to provide guidance as to the amount of these. So if we look now at dependency counsel, the proposed ongoing need is $88 million. Any thoughts, discussions, or comments on that amount and whether or not that should be the requested amount? Sherry?
I think it's too high.
Okay.
I think it's way too high. I think that if the governor and the legislature have been concerned about ongoing spending, we have to be realistic in the amount we want, and I think that I'm kind of looking to block though because he's the one that has to deal with the left, and I don't know how much ongoing revenue they think they have that could go into some of these things.
From a realistic implementation basis, we have to think about that. So what could we actually spend? Could we bring on folks and change the caseload? So that's one sort of operational factor. But definitely from a palatability from the administration, phasing it in over time and something that is a multi-year approach that still commits them to the goal would be advisable. And if it's 88, and I know that it changes based because it's going to be now workload-based, I would say something over multiple years would be better than all at once.
Mike Roddy,
some comments.
And then
I agree. The 88 one time is not. I do think we need to have a plan. I wonder whether that's something we ought to solicit expertise from, you know, Pam Juve or somebody like that. We need to understand 88 has got to be the goal. And how do we get there? And maybe there is something. I don't know if that's we have the expertise to do that, given the operational impacts that are already being felt with the reallocation of dependency money. But I agree with Sherry that 88 per se is not going to happen, but is it 22? Is it a four-year plan? I mean, what's the goal here?
I have a question for Zlatko. You said that it looked like we were going to get some additional dependency council funding this fiscal year, and it got knocked out at the last moment. What were the numbers that were being discussed?
$9 million, which was 22 more towards our methodology. And then $7 million, that was to hold harmless those courts that were losing money in the reallocation.
That's a good starting point. I think 22 was what first came to mind to me, too, if we're looking at a phased-in plan.
Okay, so I want to be careful, but I don't think as a chair I can dictate the amount. So I think the procedure we should just ask for motions. So the motion on the pre-approved and pre-prioritized BCPs addressing dependency council, is there a motion for an amount?
I don't recall too often historically we've at this committee defined the exact amounts unless we, you know, knew what they were.
We would prefer to the extent possible. There's times where
right.
To the council, but to the extent we can, it's better that we have numbers for them to consider in the grant in the total scheme of all of the branch needs.
I'll just let you know that the few times I've been informed, they always say, can you just tell us an amount?
Okay.
Just to give some guidance. Jeff Lewis.
$22 million for the first year of
dependency council. Okay, so the request is $22 million for the dependency council last second. I'm not sure. Any further discussion, comments, or questions?
Why did we knock the $7 million off? Why would we lose the $29 million?
Friendly amendment?
We've already justified, we attempted to justify those numbers before. Those are the numbers they're accustomed to.
Yeah. That wasn't part of our branch ask. That was something, you know, it's a discussion that you should have. This wasn't part of what we had we had proposed to the legislature.
We're talking about millions of dollars in like 2 seconds, and this is not the way we should be doing business, in my opinion.
Well, this is the original branch out, and that's why I support it, because I think it was well thought through at that point.
So I want to address Judge Coffman's comment, because he's right. But I think we need to be careful what this is. This is simply a recommendation of a suggested amount for guidance purposes.
If you say 22, 29, then they're going to cut you. Why not make it 40, 32? I mean, I just don't understand.
I'd rather give them the realistic number. Here's what we need. Make it happen. And they were working with 22 plus 7. They're already used to the idea. 22
half.
Reaffirms the number we need. 7 was the little harmless. So 22, right?
Well, the motion that's been moved and seconded is 22.
So perhaps for a friendly amendment with the recommendation that the remaining whole go back to FAMJU for a phased-in approach that could be used as documentation for future BCPs like next year?
I mean, I think we could do that here.
That didn't come from FAMJU.
I'm not sure where that number
22 came
from.
Because before we completed the methodology that identified the gap as 88, gap was 22. Now, 22 is just part of an overall need, which nice math would say if we have an 88 hole, it could be 22, 22, 22, 22
right.
Over 4 years,
So I think that's important, though, just to tell the whole story, even though we're at the app is just 22 this year.
I thought
so wherever that
originated,
that would be my suggestion.
I think it's Glasgow's motion.
Friendly amendment that the request would be a first year BCP of $22 million, anticipated to be 88 over 4 years.
Question. If it was 22 this past year, and we're talking about 17-18, wouldn't we want to add some inflation money to that?
I mean, the methodology will be updated based on caseloads, and so these are only estimates based on the current math, but whoever Stephen's replacement is with folks working with Don, assuming Don is still here but over the next 2 years, that methodology changes. And so 88 will, I think the point I think that Jeff made was, let's get an acknowledgement that the methodology should be funded.
If ever we had a sentimentality factor going for us, this is the time. I mean, it was right up to the very end, and then they cut it. 22 is the number they were dealing with. So they should be expecting that BCP at 22, I would think.
So that's the initial motion and second, which we need to consider and vote on. Any additional comments restricted to now what is BCP number 2, court-appointed dependency counsel, in the amount of $22 million? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. That carries. I recognize and I sense some frustration in the room, appropriately so, that we don't want to be perceived as shooting from the hip on these asks now that we've prioritized them. One alternative would be, therefore, to simply leave it to the pros, so to speak, Zlatko and others who go before finance and who know the numbers that are perhaps most negotiable. So rather than set amounts on any of these, we simply defer to finance, to our finance experts, to make the ask. Unless folks want to make recommendations.
But I think that the council has to approve that before it goes out. Council is going to look to pick back for that recommendation and number. And so I think they want it done at this level, permeated up, rather than relying on staff.
So we're now in judgeships. So now we're at what is now BCP Priority 3, new judgeships. We're all familiar with this. I think the most recent ask was 10, if I'm not mistaken. There were discussions about priorities, who gets them, what happens. Mike Roddy?
Well, it seems to me it's the council's prerogative to decide how many, and we've already provided the framework for the ask by virtue of the criteria we've developed. Finance could put those two pieces together based on what, if the council decides to go for 10 or 20.
Yeah, and I think like in the example of the judgeships, providing it, 10 cost this amount, 20 cost this
right.
amount.
Right.
Okay. So there would not be a recommendation of judgeships beyond finance making an informational item to the council about what they cost for certain allotments.
We don't mind what the formula will be, or you know how we'll calculate the cost per position. Pick a number. Go.
We'll do them in nice increments to take.
Yeah.
Judge Cope and then Judge McCabe.
Well, and likewise for these other items for self-help services, that's something that Sam Jude, working with finance, would know the cost of. The language access plan, the task force would know the cost of that. The $48 million is $48 million. And then the new facilities, the facilities committee, they're the ones who ought to put a price tag on those. I'm not sure we're the ones to put the price tags on.
Well, I'm just the chair. There's no motions. So what we have done right now is we've adopted these BCPs in this order with the language on page 96.
Can I clarify? So on the facilities cost, that would be determined by a survey to the court that are having new facilities opening in 17-18.
Does the facilities committee already know that information?
No, luckily they look at the operational impact.
That's right. We had to do a survey. That's why you do it now, because we need the time before we get to the August council meeting. This wouldn't be something that we would be doing for the July meeting.
Baco, I assume you're going to need to get surveys and get additional data, especially behind the judgeship issue and the facilities issue. You're going to have to put a price tag on that. Is there the opportunity to feed that back to the committee for maybe a voice or a telephone, short telephone meeting to say, based on the methodology, this is the amounts we've come up with? I think we've addressed the dependency one, which may be outside of the standard methodology you guys use to cost out a BCP. But then at least we do have the opportunity to see what is the ask.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
So why don't you clarify your motion so somebody can second it if they so choose.
That the finance, the Judicial Council Finance Department prepare the BCP amounts consistent with prior practice of estimating the costs necessary to support the BCP, that information be brought back to this committee for review or vote. I don't know what you prefer, Mr. Chair.
Be considered by telephonic vote within 5 days of the information being provided, and
so
that would...
We can see, so that we can then determine what the actual dollar ask will be to the council.
Okay.
Second.
All right, so second. So that applies to each of the remaining BCPs.
Yes.
All right. So moved and seconded that each of the remaining BCPs after dependency council, we receive supplemental information from finance considered by email vote by this committee within 5 days of receipt, and I think that puts us on an appropriate timeline to get it upstairs, so to speak. Moved.
Wait, with one amendment, we already know $48 million for the MOE offset.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That amount's predetermined. So moved by, I think it was moved when I brought it quickly by Judge McCabe. For a second or a first, but it is. That's the motion before this body. Any additional discussions, comments, or questions?
Language access is identified, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, language access is identified at 8.3. I anticipate that would be there for the feedback. But 8.3 is the amount.
Yeah.
I don't know if Justice Cuellar is still on the line. Okay. Moved to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Anything else for the good of the body?
Yes.
Oh.
We're changing our name to Budget Services from Finance.
Okay.
Yes.
And I love that, Mike. You picked up.
I just know Zocco long enough.
That's great.
All right. So we haven't quite adjourned yet. I just want to make sure we're a little bit early. Any additional comments, questions, or concerns for the good of the body beyond? Thank you very much. I was concerned about today and whether we even get people here. Not only did we get practically a full committee here, but it was a spirited discussion of every item. I think that's when we work our best. So thank you all very much. Drive safely. We'll be in touch. We're adjourned.
This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, so
subcommittee concerning the essentially the 1% requests.
Funds don't have the trial courts.
Pardon me? Funds on behalf of the trial courts. So Colin Simpson is present on behalf of staff, and I'll ask everybody else to announce their presence just right on the line. This is John Conklin from Fresno.
Right.
Kevin Harrigan, Glenn.
And Winifred Smith, Alameda County.
Right, and we're and on the line is from Alameda.
That's correct.
Okay. So we're here today to consider two requests.
That's correct.
That have the written materials that previously have been provided. These are consistent, and I believe they are both Tyler requests. And when I say Tyler requests, I mean requests to maintain additional funding beyond the 1 year to allow Tyler contracts to be fulfilled. And that's a gross summarization, but that's the request of both Alameda and Lassen. Is there anybody from Lassen on the line?
No, but I did speak to someone from Lassen who may say that they probably would not be able to purchase the agency.
Okay. All right. So this, candidly, these requests are very straightforward. We've considered similar requests in the past and approved them. These requests appear to be consistent. But I'm asking now if any subcommittee member has any question for Alameda on the line or a question about the last request of Colin or staff.
No.
Is there anything Alameda would like to add before we – somebody just join in? So we just got Alameda on the line? Okay.
Yes.
Alameda, would you like to add anything to your request before we consider it?
No, not at this time.
I admire your discretion. That being said, is there a motion to first off, is there a motion to approve the minutes of the prior meeting?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Minutes approved. Pardon me?
Comments.
And no public comments were received, either written, and nobody's asking to speak to the committee today. So with that being said, and not I recognize we're moving expeditiously on this matter, but I don't want anybody to feel rushed. Any questions, comments, or concerns regarding either of the proposals?
Well, I move that we approve the requests of Alameda and Lassen County.
All right. The motion is to approve each of the two requests submitted for today. Is there a second?
Second.
A motion being made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So I do want to reflect that we have four members present of a seven-member committee. I believe, therefore, we have a quorum and are acting on each of these. In an abundance of caution, I have received a proxy from Judge Saunders. She was present and had to leave to make a flight. But if a proxy is appropriate, I was given permission to vote her proxy consistently, and so she would vote in favor as well. So that being said, the two requests have been moved, seconded, and approved by the committee. Any additional matters to come before the committee?
Yes.
Alameda, thank you so much for your time. I hope you don't think we're sliding your request by approving it so quickly, but it was a good request, and I think we considered it appropriately.
Thank you.
So much. We're adjourned.
Okay, excellent.
Oh, look at that. All right.
I'm impressed. I am impressed.
Thank you all so much. It was a very productive and interesting day.
It was.
It really was.
I think it was.
Grab food on your way out if you want anything, a snack for the road.